It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. Sorry, Leo's not here. I'm here. We have the usual crew, and we talk about some really important issues, like tech after Roe. We also talk about the creepy idea of dead people talking to you from your Madame A. And then we get to my favorite story. Guess what? Taco Bell has a tostada built on a giant Cheez-It. All that is coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 670, recorded Wednesday, June 29, 2022. Stacy's a spy!
This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Indochino. If you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more by using the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. And by HackerRank. It's time to reboot your technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. With a pre-made question library, code playback, and built-in whiteboard, you'll be conducting better technical interviews and instantly identifying the right talent. Go to HackerRank.com/twig to start a better tech interview for free today.
It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. I know I'm not Leo. I'm Jeff Jarvis. I apologize for that all the time. But you're with us, and it's going to be a good time because I am here while Leo is off doing whatever Leo is doing. I'm quite confused on what he's doing, but we'll get to that later. With Stacy Higginbotham, the queen of IoT. Hi, Stacy.
Hello, Jeff. So glad to be here.
And I'm glad you're here, too, as opposed to some weeks when you just disappear on us. But you have good excuses. Next week, you're going to Paris. But I'm glad you're here for my week this week. I'm very, very happy. And there is Aunt Pruitt, the camp counselor for all of Twit, the guy who keeps all of our club members happy and respects them and loves them and they him. And we're glad you're here. Hello, Aunt.
Right. Hello, Mr. Jarvis. How you be?
And you succeed. And I'm driving them crazy because we're actually doing this after the show, but I'm doing it before the show because I messed up before. So that's the fun of this. If you were a member of the club, I'll bet you get to see all the ways I screw up. So now, let's get into our news. This week, we are going to be democratic. This is not like the normal show because Leo is not here, and we're going to use democracy because Leo keeps saying it's not a democracy. Well, this week, Leo, it is. And so I'm asking my co-hosts to mark the stories they want to do, and Stacy's going to pick the first one.
Well, let's kick it off with, I think, our big story this week, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm going to say it's the big story this week. It is tech in the wake of the Dobbs decision that makes Roe versus Wade obsolete.
And you called this when the decision was leaked, and you called the angles here. And I thought about it going into today's show, and I thought, you know, there's this thing about newspapers have the local angle, right? You know, America lands on moon, local company makes screws and rocket, right? And I don't want to go so far as to find tech angles to everything, but this story, it was not hard to find a lot of stories. This has many, many tech angles, about what the companies are doing, about what they're saying, about privacy, about technology, encryption, all kinds of things. So, Stacy, where do you want to start?
I want to start first by, like, I guess, not explaining. This is stuff we all know, but I think it's really important to reiterate in the wake of this decision. So the big macro story that everyone's talking about, we're like, holy cow, some states are going to outlaw abortion. And as part of that, when a woman is pregnant, the data that they might look for an abortion, and they are going to both have data collected by many companies, not just tech companies, but many companies, they collect data and they're very interested in knowing if someone's pregnant. And they're interested in knowing that because being pregnant means you're about to spend a heck of a lot of money.
Right.
Like,
yep.
All kinds of stuff. So this is not nefarious, like, tech companies are like, oh my gosh, you're pregnant because I want to get all in your business. They're like, oh my gosh, you're pregnant and you're going to spend a ton of money, and advertisers really want a piece of that. Mm-hmm. And so they have a vested interest in keeping this data, collecting this data, and reselling this data, and they always have. And it's retailers, it's your grocery store, your phone. So we're seeing a lot of stories about like, delete your period trackers, or, you know, turn off your phone if you're going to go get an abortion. It's a lot broader than that. The whole world wants to know when you're pregnant, and they have access to that data and can infer from that. So then the question becomes, what do states do to, if you're going to prosecute someone for going over state lines for an abortion, or maybe you just miscarry, maybe you didn't even realize you were pregnant. And if they want to prosecute that, they could. And so that's, and they can ask tech companies or financial services firms or Target for this data and use that in a prosecution is kind of the worries. And the big focus is on things like location data, period trackers. I would argue things like, you know, I've got a Fitbit on. When someone's pregnant, you might get an elevated heart rate for which you can infer that someone's pregnant. So there's a lot of data already being gathered that can infer someone is pregnant. So that's kind of the big picture story. And we can talk about individual things tech companies are and aren't doing or could and couldn't do. So I'll stop talking.
When you say it's bigger than the abortion, you're basically saying because there's other things that can be construed from the amount of data that's available. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying it's bigger than the abortion issue because there's so much of a financial interest on behalf of everyone if someone is pregnant. There are about four or five stages of life when you're about to spend a lot of money. Pregnancy is one, moving into a new home is another, getting married is usually one.
Yeah.
So those companies are not going to stop collecting that data. I know people are like, they should stop collecting this data. They're not going to stop trying to make these inferences because it's too lucrative.
And even if it's not pregnancy, Stacey, if it's just location data and you went to, you went out of state and weeks after having announced you were pregnant or other things, there's going to be a lot that goes on. I'm interested in two angles on this. First, what consumers should smartly do, what women should do. But first, what should we expect the companies to do for the users? They're also doing things for their employees and other things. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But for the users, a highly responsible tech company should now do what?
This is tough because legally they're obligated to share this data. And when you agree to the terms and services, even if you don't read them, they're like, hey, if I've got a subpoena and if your state issues, if your state DA or whoever, prosecutor issues the subpoena for that data, they have to give it up. So
what data should there be certain data that they give you a ability to erase or that they should erase on a regular schedule? Or
I think asking the tech companies to do anything here is silly. It's how we're trained to think as Americans, because we tend to think the answer lies with private enterprise, but the answer actually, unfortunately, lies with high quality regulation. You could do it either by making a federal law to make abortion legal that solves this particular issue, or you could do a federal privacy law that prevents and lays out parameters that could address the disparity in the state's laws here about when and how they can, when and what and how they can give up data. When they give up data, what data they give up and how.
But we have a non-functioning democracy in many ways. These things that should be done, I agree, at a federal level aren't going to get done, either on privacy or on abortion. And so if you are an executive of a tech company saying, what can I do? What should I do? Is there any guidance at all for them?
I think they're trying to do what they can. They're in a really crappy position in the sense like they're saying things like, hey, we will fund your abortion. We will fund travel out of the state so you can go get one. And, I mean, that's nice, but
what makes that a crappy position for them?
What?
What makes that a crappy position for the tech companies? Because I want to say I heard it from you, and I totally agreed at the time when you were saying or someone said that these tech companies are putting all of these different advertisements and posts up about being for the cause and, you know, we support yada, yada, yada. But yet at the same time, all it was just that post. They didn't put their money where their mouth is, if you know what I mean. And here is an instance where they are actually putting their money where their mouth is. So what makes it,
if
you know,
what you're saying is
the prosecutor or the law enforcement if the law enforcement officers go to your company's HR and they say, hey, we want these records.
Mm-hmm.
If your state, if your company, there's a couple issues. One, I'm not sure that they would feel comfortable and even legally protected if they refused to give that information away. But two, it requires you to have a job to be able to get access to what is really healthcare. And we already have that system here, so that's not super unusual.
Yeah.
But think about a teenager who wants to get an abortion. They can't.
Right.
So
what about from the user consumer perspective? What
from the consumer
if you lived in pick a state, who was the first one? Missouri.
Texas.
Yep. Well, you know Texas. What different digital hygiene would you take on if you were thinking of getting pregnant?
I think the things people are suggesting are helpful. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can cover everything.
Nope.
And I say that because, like, I don't know if y'all remember, probably this was one of the first big data stories. It came out in like 2013 or something, and it was Target realizing some kid was pregnant before they did and sent a notice to a mailer to the house and the dad. Yeah. It was a very big hoo-ha-ha. It's not just tech companies that know this. And so, like, I don't think you can actually protect yourself. You could pay cash for everything. You could only surf the internet through, you know, Tor. You could do everything as encrypted as possible. You know,
could not have a phone, perhaps.
Yeah, you could not have a phone. Without
how do you work these days without, how do you call your doctor? How do you stay in touch with your family?
Yeah, that's what I mean, a smartphone. Get a feature phone that's you know, doesn't have all of the smarts and connectivity, perhaps.
Well, you would have to have it not have GPS.
Yeah. So there's that too.
Well, they could still subpoena the cell phone records, right? The tower records.
That's
true.
They
could, actually.
They could call.
So
yeah.
You would just have to revert back to a landline and an answering machine.
They can subpoena what numbers you called.
Yeah, I guess they can.
Yes, but I guess you could get a burner phone and use it not in. If you were going to use a burner phone, you would never want to use it from your house. You would want to make sure I'm not a spy. I'm not trained in.
Sure.
And I don't think.
Nor should we have to be. To have families.
That's what a spy is supposed to say, Mr. Jarvis.
Oh, that's right. This is my cover.
I think Stacey's outfit today does look rather like European dashing spy, doesn't it?
Yeah. My jaunty airline.
To save the world, yeah.
And I am going to Paris next week, so.
Oh, well, you are.
See.
Oh my.
So, I mean, I want to tell people, I just feel like we have to understand the scope of the problem. And the scope of the problem is everybody has a vested interest in knowing if you're pregnant in this society. So, and there are no legal protections for companies that are like, oh crap, I don't want to give this data up. How far do I think the attorneys in the state who would prosecute this would go? I don't know. And I also think that if we leave this as it is, we're just going to get years of legal cases while this is figured out in the court system, like interstate commerce rules. You know, you're like, oh, my state that I'm in now has already said companies shall not give their data away to companies or to prosecutors seeking location data on people who come to our state to have an abortion. I don't know how that works. Do you like walk into Washington and you're like, I'm here for an abortion? And do you tell Google? So, is Google going to create separate servers for each state based on their abortion rules so they can make sure they enforce these laws? I mean, it's a freaking nightmare.
Yeah, and DuckDuckGo doesn't do it, and incognito mode doesn't do it.
No, right? You would have to use Tor.
You would have to use Tor. You'd have to be encrypted end to end.
Yeah.
Civilians don't do.
I don't even do it. I'm a freaking journalist who sometimes reports on things.
No, it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. I was like, the last time I used Tor was like a decade ago.
I know one person that actually uses it for work-related stuff, and that's it. And
are they a
everybody
spy?
Everybody else just talks about it. They're not a spy, but they're in journalism, so they have to protect their sources and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So what about the companies? We've already mentioned this, Ant. The company, Google sent a letter to its employees saying that they can just relocate without an explanation to a state. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Companies are changing their HR policies. Again, this is just the tech industry, and we cover the tech industry, but I would imagine this needs to happen in every damn industry out there. But some companies some jobs you can't move. You know, I work for Luigi's Pizza on Main Street in North Kalakak, whatever Leo says your town is.
Kakalaki,
thank you. You know, there isn't a branch of Leo's in Seattle. These are Leo's Pizza, that is. And so, you know, it's another statement of privilege that people who work for companies large enough with policies generous enough and the jobs that allow them to move. That's a small portion of people, I think.
Privilege.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's the letter from Google, which says that you know, it's an important statement to make. The head of HR or whatever they call it, people or whatever, said that equity is extraordinarily important to us as a company. We share concerns about the impact this really will have on people's health, lives, and careers. To support Googlers and their dependents, our U.S. benefits plan and health insurance covers out-of-state medical procedures that are not available where an employee lives and works. Googlers can also apply for relocation without justification, that is to say, don't say why you're moving because it'll get subpoenaed. And those overseeing this process will be aware of the situation, which is to say yes when they ask it. If you need additional support, connect one-on-one, which is to say not in a subpoenable way, with a people consultant, capital P, capital C, via link redacted. So that's what one company is doing. I salute them. I think it's good. But it affects only their employees and only, as you say, in that position of privilege.
And as you say, the policy that says you just go out of state for any medical procedures, and some companies are like, hey, any medical procedure, that opens up things like for gender reassignment, gender non-conforming words. So it opens up, you know, the opportunity for lots of other things and does make it, you know, you can just say, hey, I have to go for a medical procedure to someplace else. And no one knows. So that is a nice way of doing it, or a safe way of doing it. It's just that I don't have the data right now on the percentage of people. And I don't even know if we have the data on the types of jobs that people who tend to get abortions have. I mean, rich, well-off people have always, even when abortions were illegal, they were able to get them. They would drive down to Mexico. But you can't, I mean, having a baby is a lot of freaking work, and it's expensive, and you can't leave people with that. Is there, like, no.
No.
You know, so again, I think
just like,
this is
it's awful.
This is a good effort from the tech companies, but I believe more can be done. How about these same tech companies that are making a gazillion dollars do something with the lobbyists that are in place?
I mean,
no one ever really brings that up.
could Google say, you know what? It's no longer, like, I would love to see Google be like, you know what? It is so not worth it to have operations in these states because no one wants to work there anymore.
Except I saw that going on. I saw people talking about having academic conferences or tech conferences should not occur in these half of the states. People immediately came on and said, whoa, I'm of two minds about this. You have the people who lack the privilege and lack the money and have those kinds of jobs where they can't move and are often people of color, work in those states and live in those states. And if you cut them off, If you cut those states off, you cut off their economic basis. And I don't know which way to go on that because you know, after some of the laws that passed on gender, my university said we were not allowed to travel to certain states. No matter who paid for it, we couldn't go there. And I supported that. But I also understand the argument, the contrary argument here that says, you know, you cut off the half of America where people need it. The other question is people are saying, I'm going to move, and I think people actually will move. But then any effort to make Texas more purple gets set back. So in terms of cutting off these places, there are unintended consequences, which I think are.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences from what's happening right now, just in general. I think it's fine if companies say, hey, it's no longer worth it to have operations here because no one wants to work there. I do think there's a lot of push there. And you can see companies like Caterpillar moving its headquarters to Texas just a few weeks ago. They did it because they were frustrated with Illinois' tax laws and the way that those were affecting them. And they announced it with a lot of fanfare.
That happens all the time. Yeah. That happens all the time.
So, I mean, when Tesla moved to Texas, they moved, in protest of California, right?
So who's going to move in protest of this?
Yeah, so it doesn't make – I don't think it's terrible. I think most states recognize – when that happens, they will recognize that that is a problem. And what they'll probably do is give corporations more money as opposed to actually backtrack on their laws, which then just further tilts the scale towards us relying more and more on private enterprise for basic rights, which is terrible.
So speaking of that, now we do have some alternatives out there, like Plan B. Mm-hmm. And there was a story this week that at first Facebook and Instagram were cutting off ads for and searches for mailed abortion pills. Then they updated and said it was incorrect enforcement, and they put it back up. But it illustrates the point you just made, Stacey, is that we end up beholden to corporations for these critical things. If you can't go to the nearby Rexall, if Rexall still exists, and buy the pill because it's outlawed in your state, and you order it through the mail, well, will you be able to see an ad for it on Facebook? Will you be able to order it on Amazon? We'll get to that in a second. If you order it through FedEx, because it's not the U.S. Postal Service, will that be vulnerable to search by local authorities?
Like right now, if I try to send weed to Texas, weed is legal in the U.S. Weed is legal in Washington. It's
not yet in the U.S.
Illegal in Texas. I mean, Texas confiscates weed in the mail regularly. I don't know this. I'm not trying to bail weed.
It's one way to keep your parents happy.
Again, the spy talking.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't mean to pry, but you have family back in that part of the country. Is a discussion in the family at all or among friends? Or no, it is what it is.
You got to understand that most of my family and a few people in my circle, we try to just stay away from all of it because, quite honestly, we don't feel like anything is going to be done or anything is going to ever matter. There's going to be a lot of disappointment one way or another. And the stuff that's going on with the women's rights is just, it's just the tip of the iceberg as far as we're concerned. Most of us feel like it's only going to get worse regardless of who we vote for on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is the bigger issue.
This is not a tech issue. This is just an issue.
Democracy issue.
And tech companies and technology is not going to help us with this. It can push us over, you know, I think we've seen how it's affected our democracy, which I know you love talking about, Jeff. But, I mean, this is people have to get out on the ground and do something. I mean, you have to we have to stop being so complacent. And that means people like us, too. I mean, mm-hmm. it means more than just protesting. It actually means doing the work in terms of, like, local activism. And I don't think many of us are prepared to do that.
No.
No, I think it goes to one point that I just said. It's an ennui.
Right. I
don't know if it's ennui. It's just, and I think some people will feel it more than others. I think, like, look, I feel like I saw this coming in 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. Like, and I warned mm-hmm. people, and everyone around me is like, no, don't be silly.
of course.
It could have gone, I mean, it didn't have to go this way, but it did. And I feel that there are still people, like my husband, I'm like ready to move. I'm just ready to go.
Yeah.
I see what's happening here and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, it's not that bad. So there's always going to be people who are ready to be complacent because it's easy. And I think people who are in the groups that are going to be most affected, women.
You know, the thing is, I totally see where Mr. Andy's coming from, because there are times where I think to myself, you know what? There are thousands and thousands of people that are fleeing to get here. And there's a reason for that, you know? So I always sort of think twice about a lot of the bad bullcrap that's happening in our government and say, you know what? Well, it could be a lot worse because there's still people that are literally dying to get into these different borders.
Those people are dying to get here. A lot of them are dying to get here from Central America and Mexico, where it is admittedly so much less safe. Mm-hmm. You don't see as many people coming here. Like, the number of people applying for U.S. universities is down.
Uh-huh.
You don't see immigration. And you see the same level of, like, migrants in Europe coming from parts of Africa and places that are affected right now by climate change and poverty. So I appreciate that argument, but I'm also like, yeah, they're dying to get here because, yeah, this is still better than, like, being murdered by a drug cartel and having your body dumped in a desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Ann's point, too, before was that it's politically, you got to be motivated. And you're going to be motivated if you think there's a chance for change. And if you don't think there's a chance for change, then people aren't going to be out there. And between this and January 6th, which also has its tech angles too, we don't know where this is going to turn out.
I can sit here and tell you about my voting experience, especially like this most recent voting experience here in the state of California. No, I'm not going to divulge who I filled in the bubbles for, but I spent that whole time filling out that ballot thinking, not going to matter. They're just going to rob me too. This person's not going to fix it, but might as well give it a try. That was my thought the whole daggum time.
Yeah, that's sad.
Thank you for voting anyway.
Unrealistic. Yes, thank you for voting. Yes, wear your little sticker proudly. Let me go back to another tech topic on this, just to mm-hmm. round it out here, mm-hmm. which is two things tied together. At a higher level, what the Supreme Court talked about and what Thomas particularly is going after is privacy. Privacy is not, and we've discussed it in the show before, privacy is not enshrined in the Constitution. It came out of decisions like Griswold. It came out of these decisions, and it was a crafted right that the Supreme Court at one level just took away, and they could take away others. And privacy is a topic we talk about constantly on this show, and it's key to technology, and it's key to the internet as we move forward. So I wonder whether, just at a higher level than abortion. I think what you both said is, Stacey, you said, well, there's not much we can do about technology. It is what it is. And Ant, you said, well, politically, there's not much we can do. It is what it is. Stipulated, Your Honors. Let's go up a level and say, in terms of the architecture of the net, in terms of things like end-to-end encryption, in terms of statements of rights about what we should expect from tech companies, at a higher level about privacy, I think this brings it home. And I'm one of those, I've said, you know, on the show many times, privacy is important, but so is publicness. And I kind of talk about the other side of that. Privacy is important, and it's more important now than ever. Are there any things you would like to see from technology companies different from what we've seen in the last 10 years?
Well, I would like to see, yeah, I mean, and I've talked about this. I think you need limited data, limited, what is the word? Gosh, COVID, y'all, has really broke my brain. You should only keep data for like 6 months. We need to limit the amount of data that people can keep. We need to redefine PII. Ooh, we need to, we need to be transparent when we buy devices or sign up for things. You know, what is tracking people, what is being tracked, and where that data is going to, not written in legalese. So things like
Google and Apple put it in legalese for a reason.
No, I know, but look at what Google and Apple have. Yes, I think there are user-friendly ways to disclose that information. So there are nutritional data for like what data is being collected and shared. I think what Apple and Google did with their apps in the App Store, when you download an app and you see the permissions, I think that's a good way to do that.
Yeah.
I should also point out, if you're unaware, the beginning of June, there is a bipartisan privacy bill, a federal privacy bill. A draft of it was released. It is epic. I read it when it came out. There is a 64-page like overview of it, and the bill itself is mammoth. But it basically changes the way that we think about privacy here in the U.S. and the way we've historically regulated it. So they're basically – they modeled the laws off of – the state laws, so not GDPR. So it doesn't have this like whole enshrining a right to privacy. Instead, it really focuses on the data. It says there's certain types of data that will be private. It's basically trying to say like PII, and data that can help point back to a person. So think of like location data, where you go to your house every night. It's pretty easy to figure out who you are from that. It does exclude de-identified data. So it actually doesn't solve the location data problem. I'm sorry. And then they talk about things like data minimization. So don't collect as much data. They say that you can't do certain types of data processing, such as like transferring biometric and genetic information without getting positive consent. You need to do privacy by design in your policies and procedures. They have categories of sensitive data. They actually bring children's data. They make it private up until the age of 17. I think that's great. I've been wanting that for a while. They need data brokers will have to register with the FTC, and they have to provide like audit logs and share that data. There's a lot of stuff about data security. There's classification of companies as like large data handlers. And that's based on how much data you have and how much money you make on it. And it puts the enforcement at the federal and the state attorneys general level. There's a lot of stuff that isn't in there, but it's just a draft and we don't know if that'll happen. But I just wanted y'all to know that that's out there. And
so politically, what are you hearing about right versus left and tech versus media views?
We haven't heard a lot. Because things kind of blew up when it came out on a Friday, and then the week after that, I feel like something big happened. And I mean, it feels like something big's happening all the time.
Right.
So we haven't. I don't see a lot of people talking about it yet. Oh, but I can stick the little draft in the here.
No, yeah, do. Thank you for that. You read it more than I have, so I'm actually glad to have gotten that little pressy there. That's great. All right, one more question, then we'll go to Leo doing a commercial. End-to-end encryption. Tor is a pain. We just all shrugged and said we don't do it. Some message applications are encrypted. Is there, but I don't think we have a lot of faith in that.
I don't think I have faith in the messaging apps with the encryption because they're just not mainstream enough. It's just not a reason to get people to install it.
It could be.
That's my question. What would it take to make encryption more demanded both on the company side and on the client side, on the consumer side?
I don't think this is no different. And I'm not trying to be funny or anything, but I don't think that argument or question is no different from, well, why not get people to move from Facebook to this new social media platform? Yeah. Because it's got this bell and whistle and blah, 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 blah. And it's because of it, the barrier to entry is it's too much for people. People don't want to change. They'll talk about it, but they're not going to go. And you telling me I need to install this new app just so it can be encrypted to talk to my mother? That's okay. I'll take my chances. That's exactly what they'll say. That's exactly what they'll say. Mother. They won't install
just
that.
My mother.
Stacey? I'm like, what if Gen Z, so the teenage girls start installing it? And then if you want to talk to a teenage girl, which means teenage boys will start installing it, their parents may install it to protect their kids. Okay. So maybe you don't get...
But parents might get freaked about it, too, if parents can't read it.
Well, yeah, because there's always going to be people who are like, oh, my God, it's end-to-end encryption. I mean, it's not like we've settled this in this country that end-to-end encryption is great, because
I mean, it's hard enough to get people to just use VPN on anything, you know?
Well, this has been a cheery beginning to the show.
Yeah, way to go, Mr. Jarvis.
All right. So I'm gonna do one other thing here. I don't see any initials in here yet, but when we do the commercial, you can start looking through. But I'm going to give you one story for a cheery moment. Line 70. Taco Bell has announced a tostada on a giant Cheez-It 18 times the size of a regular Cheez-It. Now, this is important news. Wouldn't you agree?
It combines our favorite foods, Taco Bell and queso. Hardened queso. But wait, is it like it's a Cheez-It tostada?
It's a Cheez-It tostada. Yes, it's... Oh, six, I'm sorry.
I'm looking at the picture,
16 times larger. You can also get it made into one of their crunchy things when it's wrapped in 53 layers of more fat as well. But I think the simplicity of this is nice. The Cheez-It tostada is a major advance in American consumerism and technology. What does it take to make a giant Cheez-It? I mean, that's not easy, you know?
I was like, I actually used to know who Mondelez, who makes Cheez-Its... was it Mondelez or Nabisco?
Great. Nabisco, I thought.
It's Nabisco. Never mind. I was like, I know the IIO, the industrial IoT that's doing the factory automation for those guys.
Kellogg's. Kellogg's. We're all wrong.
Oh, really?
Kellogg's makes Cheez-Its?
Kellogg's makes Cheez-Its, which is soon going to be split off. I actually put this on the rundown last week, but there was no possible excuse to bring it up. Yeah. that Kellogg's is going to be broken up into three companies. And one of them is called something as a working title, something like Future Snack Company. I'd buy stock in a snack company, wouldn't you? So this is a major leap forward in snack technology. I think that's a wonderful thing. And on that note.
Taco Bell for thinking about all of the stoners and coming up with this.
Well, you know, what's most significant about it is actually that it means that Taco Bell is going to bring one more ingredient inside its production lines, because Taco Bell is famous for only having X number of ingredients, and from that they assemble everything. But this is a new one, so that's worth celebrating.
It is indeed, and they've been out of Mexican pizza, which is causing problems. Yeah,
I don't even.
All right, that's our Taco Bell moment for the week. Now we're going to go and get a break from Taco Bell with Leo giving you an advertisement. Over to you, Leo.
Hey, everybody. Sorry to interrupt. I love Indochino's stuff. You put your measurements in, and then they build it to order, custom tailored to fit you precisely, and it works so beautifully. I right out of the box. I think they're gorgeous. They're beautifully made. If you've got a special occasion coming up, you're going to be a groom in a wedding party, you're going to be a lucky guest, you want to look your best with a custom-fitted suit from Indochino, you're going to look great. You're going to feel confident. You're going to enjoy the big day without fussing over your clothes. And you know, when they fit right, when they're tailored to your exact dimensions, you know how when sometimes when you dress up, you feel like you can't move, you're all stiff. It doesn't feel like that because it fits perfectly. You're comfortable. It fits like a glove. It's like it's a second skin. You feel good. You look good. And you can make these look exactly as you want. It doesn't have to be purple velvet. I kind of went crazy, but you can choose every detail, suits, shirts, dinner jackets, and the prices. I was kind of stunned. This is for a fully custom piece. Very affordable. Very affordable. Came out of the box. I put it on just perfect. It doesn't fit perfectly. Of course, you can get it adjusted. They can fix it for you. We just measured carefully. Once they get the measurements, now I'm going to be ordering all my suits and jackets from Indochino, because every suit is made to your exact measurements. And I love choosing the lining. I love the lapel to choose the shape, the monograms. You know, you get those statement linings. You should see. Well, if you're on the cruise, you will see. I have quite a beautiful lining on my dinner jacket. And the best part, I couldn't believe this. Indochino suits start from $429. Shirts just $79. They fit great. They look great. I should put on. I have one of the shirts here. Should I put it on? No. I won't do that to you. Just trust me. They are gorgeous. Indochino offers completely custom fitted shirts, casual wear, and more. You get that wardrobe personalized to your style and taste without spending a fortune. And they're always adding new stuff, so check the site regularly. You could stay on trend and in style. I'm not known for being a stylish guy, but thanks to Indochino, I want to look really sharp on this trip. Explore their relaxed yet refined approach to spring suits with their new spring pastels. If you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more. Use the promo code TWIT at Indochino.com. $50 off a purchase of $399 or more. Indochino.com. Promo code TWIT. We love them. Please use the promo code so they know you saw it on This Week in Google. Indochino.com. Promo code TWIT. And look for some pictures of me on the boat. You'll see. I look good. Thank you, Indochino.
So now I'm confused. Is he on a boat? Or is he not on a boat? You just said he's on a boat.
That's for when he's on the cruise.
That's for when he's on the cruise, sir.
When's he going on the cruise?
I think that's
he's going on the cruise on the 15th.
Or 15th.
Oh, he hits Seattle, I think, on the 15th.
Oh, I'm very confused.
Don't worry.
Jet City Leo just leaves me. All right. So this is a democracy. So there are other big stories to get, which we probably should get to. But it being democracy, and the fact that I've already used up my free Bloomberg articles for the month, I put this one in there in the rundown as Stacey Bate, hoping she would explain it to me, because I can't read it because I've gone over my allocation. So ADT and Google, Stacey, explain what's going on.
Yeah. So we actually talked about this on my show. So tomorrow, you can skip this section of my show tomorrow if you listen. But this is actually a delightful article. As a journalist, I have to say the article starts out with Palmetto Bay, Florida, underneath a Thomas Kincaid painting with an installer for ADT. And I just like, I know exactly what kind of home this is and who it's for in the audience, right? I'm like, all right. So this is talking back in August 2020. Google purchased a 6.6% stake in ADT, the security company. I think it was $450 million. And this is basically saying 2 years later, what has come of this? And the answer for Google is, maybe not that much. But for ADT, it's been huge. And it talks about, you know, ADT is bundling some of Google's smart home hardware, like the Nest doorbells, cameras, displays, thermostats, all of that in with ADT's other sensors and alarm things. And they're trying to build solutions for customers. What Google gets out of this is basically they sell more Nest devices. They get access to this huge base of installers. And this is so important because the smart home is such a pain in the butt to install. Good Lord. And most people don't want to do it. And it also puts it in like old people's homes. I shouldn't say old people, but older people who may not be smart home aficionados, right? These are not the people who buy ADT. And the other thing is Google's going to get that data from them. We're all about that data.
Old people won't be getting pregnant.
So it gets that demographic data, and ADT gets to appear like with it, hip and with the times, and addresses, because they've really had clunky, old, yucky equipment that nobody really cares for.
Without a deal like this, would AT&T have gone out of business eventually because it just was so old and clunky?
No. Well, maybe. But AT&T, the stat in the story was like 80% of its revenue is recurring revenue from people. So they really had no reason to care. They're just like...
Does AT&T lean more on the enterprise side of things?
No, they're very consumer. You know those little... No, they're super consumer.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Those stickers on grandma's house, you know.
Yeah, you see those everywhere, but I think I'm seeing more and more of the rings and Wise, all the other security cams.
Well, that's what AT&T was like. Nowadays. Well, they saw this coming. AT&T actually, in 2013, invested in a company called Sonoff to help like make it smarter and get into that space, and they failed. Right.
You know what the sad thing is, though? With that said, that ain't stopping people. People are still walking up. They see your camera and like, hey, I'm going to just check and see what's in your car right now. And literally wave at your camera. You know, it's like, does that even matter anymore? The sign used to deter people back in the 90s.
What do you recommend for security these days, Ms. IoT?
It depends on who you are. I mean, I shouldn't say this. I don't have a security system because I don't think they're really worth the money. I think it. I also live in a pretty safe place. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
If you've got like porch pirates, yeah, I recommend a doorbell camera tied to an alarm.
Right.
And there's some really cool things. Like Vivint actually just introduced, I think this is actually really cool, and this is all AI-based, basically. They have a doorbell camera that's linked to an alarm system and a light, and they'll see if someone is at your door and it's not someone it recognizes, and they linger there for more than X number of seconds, and you can set this up, your doorbell will start going beep, beep. It's like the car alarm effect. But it's possibly a little bit more.
No, wait. So it's using facial recognition, number one. Right.
It is. It's using image recognition on your face locally. So it only stores your family's faces locally. And if it's not one of those, it actually may not.
This sounds mighty unhospitable.
Well, if someone gets up and rings your doorbell, it's not going to beep at them. But it's like if I come up and I like try to take your package, it will yell at me. Or if I loiter.
What if you're
and you don't have to turn
Amazon
that feature
guy
on.
Dropping the package off?
Yeah, that person's dropping and going, so it knows.
Oh,
that,
I see. So it's a matter of time. Oh, okay,
that makes sense. Algorithm.
So my 96-year-old father, if he tried to very slowly get up the stairs, it's going to yell at him and give him a heart attack. Very nice. Yeah, that's nice.
You don't have to turn it on.
Oi. Ant, do you believe in security? I don't want to make you reveal anything about your home.
Do you believe in security, Ant?
Security stuff?
Well, I'm sort of like what Ms. Stacy says. I think there are a bit of a waste, and because most of the time, by the time they go off, it's too late. You know, they've already done the damage, if you will. But it's nice to be able to try to minimize the damage. So there's that. But yeah, for me, I definitely have the cameras around here just to keep an eye out on things, because there's a lot of homeless people that roam around and they've been quite curious. I've seen it with my own eyes and I've seen it on camera, and you know, fortunately it hasn't been a bunch of times, but it was enough times for me to, you know, notice it.
Yeah, we used to have a neighbor
having a dog named Kylo.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I think a dog is probably more effective than a home security system in many cases. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A cat, however, doesn't do jack. Cat goes right under the bed.
But then, I must give Biscuit some credit, too. Biscuit is the tiny one of the bunch, but Biscuit hears anything and he's barking, which can be annoying. But at 3 in the morning, when I hear him barking, it's usually for a reason.
Because he protects you.
So
people
thinks.
Stole my Adirondack chairs off of my porch in one of my houses.
No.
Like an old house, not I don't have more than one house, but like older house. And my dog slept through the whole thing. I walked out on the front porch and I was like, huh. what happened? And then I was like, oh, it must be, this is my brain. I was like, oh, it must have been my dad. I was expecting him, my parents to show up this morning. They must have gotten here early and he moved it to prank me. So I walked around the house looking for the chairs because I was like, surely they're here.
Well, that's what the dog was thinking too. Oh, they're pulling that prank. All right, I'm just going to sleep.
Yep. Not my job. I don't care. All right, so on big stories, let's just take democracy to this level here. You guys pick which one you want to talk about. We should probably talk about a few big stories here. We got the Elon report of the week. Miscellaneous Elon news. We've got Trump and Truth Social and the problems there related. We have Google and some controversy, interesting controversy around whether political emails go to spam. We have a little bit on January 6th and how that's been kind of made for the internet. And we have Instagram looking at young people's faces to figure out how old they are with technology. Which one of those?
Man, they should not do that. This is where audits come from. We'll talk. I'm ready on Instagram.
Go, okay, fine.
Go.
Did you look at that story?
This is an example of, like, you know how I said, like, you could infer someone's pregnant? They're inferring someone's age based on data. And when you're dealing with inference, and that's really all, I mean, when people say AI, they're basically saying, yeah, we're going to infer something about something based on what my computer thinks. And those things can be biased, they can be wrong, which is why we need audits as part of all of this. And for a company, it's less problematic. I mean, it just means that you won't get on Instagram, I guess. But basically, these are stupid and you have to prove they work. And right now, we do the opposite. We throw them out into the world and you have to prove they don't work. And that's not right.
I have Asian friends particularly who constantly get told, oh, you look so young, and get mistaken and get carded and so on more. And
there is that phrase, black don't crack, sir. I'll go ahead and say it for
you. There's that too. Thank you.
Yeah, I wasn't going there.
Ann is only 21, and look at the career he's already had. It's amazing.
But yeah, Queen Pruitt gets carded all the time.
Really?
Yeah, carded all the time. And thinking Instagram would get that right? No shot.
No, especially not. No. So, did this trip your creepy alarms? I guess we should do a little more of the story. So Instagram has contracted with a company. Where is it? No, here. Oh, Christ, I can't get it up. I forget, that's part of Leo's job is to actually talk about the story.
And the story's ready to go.
Impart a few facts.
Yeah.
Oh, silly me.
You got to orient all of us because not everyone reads the stories.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Well, fire me. Just fire me right now. You can take it. It's already an anarchy. One of you can take over, and it's fine.
Wait, we're not going to fire you. It sounds like you're trying to abdicate.
Yeah.
I will not be king. So the company is called Yoti, Y-O-T-I. It finds that it is less accurate for female faces and, yes, people with darker skin. And that for under 24s, its estimates can be off by 2.5 years. However, if the tool is making broad guesses about a user's age, its accuracy improves. One 2020 analysis of Yoti's system by a third-party nonprofit found that it was 98.89% reliable and guessed people's age. All right, but the point of this is larger. It's... And it goes to what you said earlier, Stacey, about the federal privacy regulations. Instagram says you have to be 13 to be on Instagram. What the hell can they do about it now? We get pissed off that kids are on social media. We get legislation and regulation aimed at saying you're going after children and you're addicting them. So do they need to do desperate things like this? Is this the thing?
Instagram can't win in this.
We're going to
bitch and moan about them not having these types of measures in place, but yet when they're saying, hey, we need to try to address this, there's not going to be a proper way for them to do this. I don't think there is. Because anybody can go in there and just put in the wrong information, which is what all teenagers do anyway.
Which they do, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yep. Stacey, as a parent, would you have welcomed this when your daughter was 12? I know she.
I would not let my 12-year-old be on Instagram. But
that's what I'm saying. Would you have welcomed this to prevent her from being on Instagram?
I feel like with a 12-year-old, you probably have enough control over their devices still to not have to rely on something like this. At 15 or so, it becomes a little bit more problematic.
I concur.
That's really tough. Like, I mean, I want to say that people probably should be slightly more active parents at that age, but...
Wait a minute. Gonna step on some toes there, Miss Stacy. Be careful.
Well, no, is that fair? Because there are some devious children running around out there.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you
100%. So I'm not worried about that.
I agree with you 100%. But every time I've said that same statement, people have come at me hard.
I know.
You think you're a better parent? And I'm like, no, I'm not thinking I'm the better parent, but I'm thinking most parents, especially people in my age group, are pretty craptastic parents. And we just don't do a good job of managing and handling our kids. You know?
I think we have to be more proactive with technology. I won't say you're a crap parent. I'll just say I think as parents we have to be more proactive with technology. And that's hard and it sucks, but we kind of have to do it.
It's awesome that these kids are quote unquote smarter these days and can figure out a lot of the tech that's available to them. But at the same time, they're a little bit too smart for their own good. And that's when the parents have to step in and like you said, be more proactive on this stuff.
Back to our top story. I can imagine a zealous prosecutor demanding data on people under the age of 18 searching on abortion.
Ooh.
Or talking about it or things like that. I can imagine, you know, lots of ways without proper care this could use. Also, look at the UK. They're going to require age verification to look at porn. You got to go to the pub and get certified that you're old enough. Oh, isn't that a bit bad enough? You used to go to the Walgreens and say, where are the condoms? you know, now you got to go to the pub and say, well, I want to look at porn. Can you verify me?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how this is going to get used elsewhere in other ways.
Well, I think you could actually use something like that to normalize going to the pub to get age verified to be on the internet, which means then you could also look at porn, but you wouldn't be stigmatized because you'd be looking at Instagram as well. What if you look at it like
so
that?
So Instagram could verify you to get look at porn?
Well, no, what I'm saying is you go someplace and you say, hey, I'm going to get a verification of my age from someplace. Maybe it's my DMV. So if your site requires me to be 16, so if more sites require someone to be a certain age to collect data on them, for example, then you could say this person is 16 and here's the verification data that says that. And then as they age up, then they've already become verified and then they can look at porn whenever it's appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, the other issue here is for like kids who are non-binary, who are looking for a place. It's, you know, the anonymity. Jeff Kossoff, who wrote the key book on Section 230, also wrote The United States of Anonymity, which is a new book, which is very good. And you know, as we often point out, it's the vulnerable in society who need to be able to use anonymity. And age verification cuts that, right? Because you're verifying who you are and how old you are in one fell swoop. So,
well, that is true.
Yes.
All right, we'll put it on the blockchain and that'll solve everything.
Yeah, well, exactly. All right, Ant, you marked one of the stories here in Democracy Day for Netflix.
I did, and I'm not an added subscriber, but I was curious because we talked about Netflix a couple months ago, noticing how their numbers are sliding from the subscription side of things, and then they mentioned, okay, well, maybe there should be an ad version of it. With them speaking with Google, allegedly, is this just to say, hey, Google, what are you doing? Can we get a little bit of your secret sauce and put this into our platform? Or, again, I'm not subscribed to Ad Age, that site there.
Right,
so I didn't
couldn't
know
get into it either, yes. I should have found a different link, but yeah. So they're talking to, Netflix is talking to two companies, and I forget who the other one is right now, but primarily Google's of most interest as to whether Google can just get us in the ad business overnight. And so Netflix could say to Google, you sell our ads, you take all the stuff, what kind of revenue can you give us? What kind of data can we give you about entertainment? It's a really interesting potential lash up there. Do you subscribe to Netflix, Stacey?
I do subscribe to Netflix, and I actually subscribe to a bunch of places, and I subscribe and pay more, like on Hulu, to avoid ads.
So you wouldn't care if Netflix was...
So if I would just spend more money to avoid ads.
Yeah, to avoid the ads.
You would, but then there's also the other five people or so that are asking to use your username and password, which is still not helping Netflix, right?
Well, but Netflix is chomping down on those. What is the word I'm looking for? Netflix is trying to stop that.
Clamping. I love that word, chomping.
Clamping down. This is just going to be an exercise in translating Stacey's like post-COVID brain lapse here.
Do you really feel a difference, Stacey? Do you really?
I thought I was having a heart attack on Monday. I did a workout on Sunday, and I was so sick afterwards. And my doctor was like, "Okay, you should stop." And now I'm trying to be better, but my brain is totally. I'm having a lot of hard time with words. Oh God!
Wow.
This isn't uncommon.
You may be grateful that I'm not on the show for 2 weeks, but yeah. So I'm a Netflix subscriber. What did you ask?
If you're a subscriber, and would you pay more? And
so you're not a Netflix subscriber, so that's why you're kind of interested in getting it.
But I'm thinking about it from the standpoint of YouTube, because I'm a YouTube Premium subscriber as well. Because you don't get ads on Netflix right now, so it doesn't cross my mind. But I think about every time that my card has expired on YouTube, and I go and watch YouTube, and these really annoying ads pop up, and it really freaks me out. It's totally worth that extra, however much I pay a month. I don't even remember how much I pay, but it's totally worth that extra couple bucks to get rid of those ads, all at the same time while making sure the creators are still being supported. I just wonder, you know, do people even think about it that way from the Netflix side of things, because they never really saw ads to begin with, you know, other than it was just their own house content that they were promoting,
right? Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm doing a project about magazine history right now. And so one of the early magazines, I don't know which one it was, might have been Ladies Home Journal, one of those, offered you a club plan where if I subscribe and then I get you to subscribe, Stacey, and you to subscribe, Ant, you get cheaper prices and I get a cheaper price. And we've all benefited because you turn me, the customer, into your sales agent.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think was what could have been done with the likes of Netflix. It's fine. Sell it to 20 people. But then it's in your interest to make Ant be honest and not pass your password around to 100 more people. And you get a better rate because you sold to Ant.
Okay.
Wait, did you just turn Netflix into a multi-level marketing
scheme? MLM. Mm-hmm.
Kind of brilliant. Is that what just happened?
Yes.
Kind of brilliant.
No.
The Amway of entertainment.
The Amway of entertainment.
Title.
Netway. All right.
Well, related to this, I found it interesting that just right before we got on the air, Snap is thinking about now a premium layer. Everybody's trying to get subscription revenue, and if they have subscription revenue, they're all trying to get ad revenue and vice versa. And there's only so much to go around in both cases. Have you guys used Snap in recent history? Ant,
no.
You're hipper than us.
Wait. You think I'm hipper?
And you do photographs. Ant is not. No. He is not hipper than I.
Not even close.
Oh, it's competition.
I'm like, hold on a sec. I'm not saying that he's not, you know, sort of with the times, but I'm going to disagree.
No, I only open up Snapchat to check on the hardhead. One of them uses it fairly often.
Active parenting. Ta-da.
That's it. I just check in and I'm out. That's it. I want to say my profile on there even has, like in the text, I do not use this app because I used to get all of these notifications of people wanting me to friend them and all that stuff. It's like, I do not use this app. So, but I only open it up to check on Hardhead, and if everything looks okay, and not a bunch of foolishness, then I close it. But if there's something he's doing stupid, I'm going to call him out. But yeah,
so Snap is pricing at $3.99 a month, a subscription geared toward, quote, the people who spend most of their time communicating with their closest friends on Snap. Snapchat Plus is mostly a cosmetic upgrade. The notable features include the ability to change the style of the app's icon. See who rewatched a story and pin one of your friends to the top of your chat history as a BFF. Yes, that last one gives me MySpace vibes too, says the author on The Verge. You think there's any chance that a hardhead would pay for this, Ann?
Nope.
I wonder if people like to see who rewatched your like if you got, you know how LinkedIn's like you got 217 people checked out your profile. See who they
pay
are.
Pay us to tell
Give
you
us
who.
Money.
Yeah. Which I don't do.
That
do
might
you do?
Work. No.
Maybe.
I don't care. I'm a journalist.
I mean, those analytics are useful for people that are getting paid from Snapchat some kind of way, making money off of this stuff. So I get it. But
what if you just broke up with an ex and you wanted to see, that's what they should do. All the social medias should create a breakup package. And when you break up, they offer all this so you can see if your ex is stalking you.
Aunt, you're right. She is a spy.
Yes.
She thinks like a spy. She acts like a spy.
Where is this coming from?
Yeah, geez.
What is brilliant, man? They should pay me to think of these ideas. It's brilliant.
Jeez, I think the Amway of Netflix is smarter than that. I don't know. The amount of market
anyone,
you need, I don't know.
Anyone in the chat, the Discord, y'all wouldn't pay for an X mode?
Well, look, I look at that type of information on Instagram because I'm trying to figure out how to get the most out of Instagram for my business. You know, so I'm going to look to see how many people are looking at this story, who is actually tapping and replying, so on and so forth, because that's useful information. Fortunately, I'm not paying a dollar for it. I'm just paying for it through Facebook's data collection. You know, I just don't think anybody using Snapchat is going to do that unless they have some sort of monetary gain coming from it.
Yeah.
An investment, if you will.
Right, I want to go back to Stacey's business.
Yeah, there are businesses on there. That's what I'm saying. If anybody's going to do that, it would be the brands, possibly, because they're looking at, it's just more analytics for them to figure out their next campaign.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I didn't realize brands were on Snapchat. I want
to go back
to
Stacey's business. So, Stacey, how long have you been married now?
20 years? No. 20 years. I think.
So post-internet, you got married.
Barely. Oh, yeah. We got married in 2003. 2002?
Okay. We
have a cake slicer that has our wedding date. I don't know when it is.
She don't know.
The romantic. Why am I not surprised Stacey's not the romantic? Is Andrew romantic?
I mean, he's a little bit more sentimental, but I don't know if he knows.
Okay, all right.
Maybe we're on our 19th. What year is it?
All right. Now, Aunt, how long have you been married?
Oh, man, see, this is easy for me. I could just look down here at the date and do the math, and it's 21.
Oh, 21. Wow.
Wait, do you have the date somewhere?
No, I just look at the year, and that's all. 21.
You know what year you were married in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
It was really easy. It was the best year of my life.
Oh, what a husband. Oh,
wait, man.
That's real
talk. What about them,
That's real talk. No, I'm dead serious. The year 2000 was the worst year of my life, and the year 2001 was the best year of my life. That's real talk. And my family knows that because I've given them the stories.
All right, so now what I want to know is Stacey's business. I know the answer to this is yes in all cases. Did you look up exes?
Me?
Have you looked up exes? Yes, you.
Okay, hold on. This is super personal.
I know it is. That's why it's fun.
He warned you.
No, my last ex, like, I've only dated like three people in my life. I was a child bride. I got married when I was 23. So, and I'm 43. I got married when I was 20. 20 years ago. Anyway, I might be 44.
Hey, well, we literally just had a light bulb.
Anyway. Oh, man.
COVID brain affects all kinds of things.
I just don't have a sense of time. I mean, anyway, the point is, so my big ex, there was no Facebook, there was no social. I mean,
right,
yeah, maybe
right.
We had MySpace. Yeah, I got married in 2003 or two. One of those.
So where I'm going is this. If someone looked up you, would you find that charming or creepy? And you contacted like, you. Said, oh, Stacey, I wonder how you're doing.
Oh.
An ex.
An ex?
Yeah.
I mean, no. Maybe. I don't. I'm not good at social things.
or math.
Or math.
Or math or time or words. I'm really just bad at everything today.
No, but you're clean. You're very clean, and I appreciate that.
That's true. I did shower. so I'm thinking back. I mean, I think my ex from high school reached out on LinkedIn like 10 years ago, and that wasn't creepy.
Okay, that's good.
It's only right after like a breakup that I think you would be weird.
Well, that's where it goes back to your business. So there's a certain time when you want to spy on somebody.
Isn't that a thing that people do? They're like cyber stalk their ex just to see.
Mm-hmm. Or they do.
This is all theoretical to me because I don't interact with people this way.
Aunt, what about you? Did you?
What about me?
Anybody look you up? Did you look up anybody from your past
lives?
Yeah,
people. I would get notifications that so and so started following me, and a little, you know, light bulb go off. Like, wait a minute, I remember that name. And then I had to go back and look. And most of the time, I was just sort of smiling to myself, snarky, if you will, because those people that really didn't care about me back in the days anyway, they usually talk crap about me, but yet now you're following me, ha ha ha, I'm not following you. It was, you know, that kind of stuff for me.
Yeah. All right, different story here. So I'm gonna pick this one. I'm fascinated by Google and campaign messages in spam. So a bunch of conservatives went after Google saying discriminating against us because we're right wing. You're putting our stuff in spam. And God bless Mike Masnick, the magnificent Mike, did a great story about this, looking into it further, and finding that it was Victory, the same company that Facebook hired to go after TikTok. And what Mike says is basically they're really bad at email, and they tried to make an issue out of not being. Their mail getting through for their client, their Republican clients. So they made it into an issue because they like to complain that Silicon Valley is not fair to them. And so they went after that. So then Google comes back and says, okay, we're going to propose a policy to keep campaign messages out of spam. Okay, then what happens? Then the Democrats say, whoa, if the other side sends a whole bunch of spam crap, they should be in spam, and you just kneeled to them far too soon. You should hold on more.
That's
so
the thing.
It's another example of they can't win.
Well, that's the thing. Where do you draw the line on this? Because was it Jim? What was his name? Jim Norman? Jim, whatever his name. What's the guy?
Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan. I remember seeing him on the screen fussing about this stuff. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, well, maybe your email is just bad. But then again, this is a problem. This could be a problem for everybody, not just the Republicans and the right. This could be a problem
for
everybody.
Should listen. They should listen to the users. Like,
right.
Mark, I can't tell you. Like, I love Beto. But dear God, his campaign sold my email to everybody and their freaking dog. Or maybe it was ActBlue. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're now all spam. All spam. And if mm-hmm. Google tries to take them out of spam, I will be pissed.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what... So, well, but I'll have you know, by the way, I just received an invitation to the official 2022 Republican Advisory Board. Lies. I'm sure they want to hear the advice I have for them.
Jeff, lies. Don't go. This is definitely... They're bringing you in to do something bad to you.
All I have to do is take a survey. Take the official survey. Yeah, I'm getting it from all over. Somebody, some wag signed me up for Trump email long ago, right? And thank goodness for Google, it puts it into it doesn't put it in spam, or there may be more in spam, but it puts it in my what do you call it?
Promotions, or something.
Yeah, so which is absolutely
I moved everything to spam.
Yeah.
Oh no, some of my promotions are great.
But at the same time, there are some people that support those campaigns that wants to see that communication.
Well, I actively mark mine as spam.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's...
Does it disappear then?
Well, it goes into spam. I don't open my spam.
Oh, for you. Obviously, right. Yeah. Well, but when they go around, when they go to the next trick or the next email address or the next candidate or the next whatever, are you regularly marking things for spam?
No.
Really?
It took a while. You won? I don't want to say I've won yet, but yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Wow.
Whoa. How about you, Ant? Do you get political spam?
Not as much as I used to. Thank goodness.
Oh, I get tons. And you're right, Stacey. I get it from candidates who I have nothing to do with in places far, far away. I've got to give to my own congressman's campaign, which I haven't done yet, which I will do tonight. I got to remember to do that tonight. Tom Malinowski is a good guy. But I'm getting him from like Nebraska. Why would I give to a candidate in Nebraska? It costs nothing to send it to me.
Act Blue is kind of evil. If you ever donate through Act Blue, I think that's an issue.
Oh.
I'll be honest.
How did you track it down? Did you do, this is what I do for a lot of stuff that I sign up for. If I'm signing up for a service and it's asking for an email address because I have my domain, I will call the email address service@antpruitt.com. And so when I see that pop up later on in spam, I check. Okay, this came to what email address? Okay, so service just sold my information, and then I usually cut ties with them or whatever. Is that how you figured it out?
Signing up as Stacy plus blah, 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 plus, actblue@gmail. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, basically creating a custom...
Like an alias, if you will.
Yeah.
So here's more details of the story. Go ahead, Stacey. Go. You first.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to go into the details of the story.
I want to hear the details. What if that changed? Okay. You know how I like details before I comment. I want to know what I'm talking about.
No. This is anarchy. We're reversing everything. It's upside down day. We do the blather first, then the facts. So Google's plan, which was first reported by Axios, says The Verge, would allow candidates, political party committees, and leadership political action committees to apply for a special pilot program that would make their messages exempt from Google's spam detection system. What's
that's privilege.
Fascinating me about this? It is. And the idea was proposed to the Federal Election Commission in a June 21st filing, asking for their approval. Now, I don't know why they would have to approve this. Google could make it a policy. I'm not sure. And so the Google is making the request to the FEC. Greg Stoib, Steube, Republican, Florida, I have no idea how to pronounce his name, was the first Republican to suggest the GOP campaign emails were wrongly flagged as spam. My parents have a Gmail account and aren't getting my campaign emails, he told Sundar Pichai during a high-level executive meeting.
This is just Republicans whining. The issue
was raised once again. Exactly. After a North Carolina university study found that Gmail was more likely to mark Republican emails as spam, well, because they send out 20 times more. That's why. Based on what I get, they're just constant. Well, especially Trump. The Trump stuff is just funny. You were getting the Eric Trump stuff, and it was hilarious for a while there. You've been selected. You can go to a golf round of golf with Dad, who's only 5 miles away from me right now. I wanted to go, this is a quick January 6th moment. I wanted to get, believe it or not, there are Heinz adult ketchup costumes. I wanted to get a ketchup costume and go march in front of Trump's golf course, which is 5 miles away from me. I thought that would be amusing. Wouldn't be one of my proudest moments in life. But me in a ketchup costume?
Huh? Do it.
Yeah? And you'd have a Halloween costume.
My professor, no, I'm not going to do it. No. But I like the idea. It was funny. So anyway, so then the Democrats are saying, no, Google, you're buying them hook, line, and sinker. They're just whining. You're doing this. You shouldn't do this. So, Stacey, what I'm hearing from you is, if you end up getting the spam you've gotten rid of back in your email, you're going to be pissed.
Super pissed. I worked really hard to mark a lot of stuff as spam.
Yeah. So that's where that story stands. All right. Ant or Stacey? No, it's Stacey's turn. So you can pick another one of what you've already marked, or I can pick one of the ones you've marked. It's up to you.
Let's see. What did I mark? Carbon footprint in cloud?
Yeah.
No. The Google Q.
Oh, no.
I love this story. Yes,
that was more Stacey bait. Yes, I knew you'd like this one.
I went to this launch event. I'm like, oh, the Nexus Q.
Oh, man.
I was so glad. 10 years. And so that Verge headline is Google's worst hardware flop was introduced 10 years ago today. The Nexus Q, which was a streaming device. Now, I had a couple issues. One is, would you say the Nexus Q was the worst Google hardware failure?
Well, you know what I'm going to say was
Google
the worst.
Glass.
It was Glass, but they said at least Glass got released and is used in some ways. I agree. As soon as I saw that headline, I said, no, it's Glass.
I could have sworn I've seen one of these in the Twit host office on the back shelf.
Oh, yeah. They handed them out when they launched it. So a couple of, like, I gave mine to one of, at the time I was at GigaOM. So Yonko, our online video recorder, was the guy who reviewed it for us. But it was so weird. It was such a weird shape. It didn't seem like it would fit on your, you know, it was before we had all these round and friendly devices, so you were, like, going to put this round device somewhere in your stack of, like, VCRs and hubs and Rokus and soundbars. I mean, it was just silly.
It was ahead of its time.
Sometimes. And it was... It only worked with Google stuff, right? It was really weird.
And it never came out to the market, right? So you gave away...
Well, they physically made them.
Right, you gave away a collector's item.
Well, yeah, but I gave it away to another journalist, so maybe he still has it. I don't know.
Let me see.
Chat room, Virgil confirmed that Mr. Howell does have one. So I did see it in the Twit host office here recently.
you can sell it for $50 on eBay. No, that was only the manual. $220.
Why is it best offer on eBay?
I don't know. If Leo were here, we'd get him to buy it.
They learned a lot about it. They built the Chromecast after this. The design is actually now something we see in our home. I mean, like, this looks like an Echo 4 in a lot of
ways. Where did this fit in versus Alexa and everything?
Oh, this was way before. They launched that. Madame A launched the Echo launched in 2014 in December. You could pre-order it, or like it was like invite only when the Amazon in 2014, and then it came out to everybody. And they started doing the smart home stuff in March of 2015. The Google stuff didn't come out, like the Google Home didn't come out until 2016.
Which is so weird because they had the beat on this; they were ahead. Is this one of those corporate cases where...
This was a video-only device.
It didn't work. It was video only?
The Q was only for playing video. It wasn't for... It wasn't like a smart speaker.
Oh. Wait, I've got a really dumb question. How did it play video? What didn't have a screen?
It was like a... It was... You plugged it into your TV.
It was Chromecast.
A streaming device.
Yeah.
All right. So it was ahead of Chromecast. Yeah. All right.
All right. Oh, the Google Home launched in November of 2016.
It's way ahead of
its
time.
This was like an early... This was a weird-looking Chromecast.
What was the one? I'm forgetting this. Who had the first Chromecast?
Ooh, I think was
Apple or?
Oh no!
Or Fire?
No.
What about?
No, there was.
Fire
I thought
TV,
it was Google was it the and then Fire.
Was it Roku? I mean, yeah. Well, Roku had its own kind of box.
Yeah, but then they built
Google
a dongle.
Did it first.
Amazon Fire. Okay, hold on. Release date for the Fire TV was 2014, and Google's Chromecast came out in 2013. There you go.
Well, speaking of the Fire TV, that happens to be in the rundown because Amazon has to face in court a trademark defense against Fire TV, a porn service. F-Y-R-E TV, and the court is saying, yep, people could get confused. So Amazon could find themselves in a bit of a mess because they have the brand Fire TV. That's not much more to say than that, but I was just saying, all right. Let's see.
And it is so.
Elon, we got to do a quick Elon update. This is like the...
Must we?
It's no different from the change log. It's the Elon log. The E-log.
Why do we... Ugh. All right, go, Jeff.
Right, I'll make it quick. So he asked for data from Twitter to prove his case about bots. They gave him data. He got confused. It wasn't enough. So they gave him more data. They just smashed data on him. Tons of data for Elon. That's one Elon point. Elon has passed over 100 million Twitter followers. But Elon has basically stopped tweeting. He hasn't tweeted much at all ever since the SpaceX letter about him ruining the company with their tweets. But here is my favorite Elon story of the week. Remember how Elon said, all you people have to come back to work, you lazy SOBs, you got to come back to work, you got to be here because that's all that matters?
Yep.
Guess what? They don't have enough desks.
For real?
Yeah. And the Wi-Fi signal is too weak to work. Yeah.
Okay.
I laugh.
I don't know.
I imagine
Elon segment has been more entertaining the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's the Elon log. The E-log? What do you think? You're making a regular feature of the show, I think. The E-log.
Ugh.
I wonder if him not tweeting right now, was this something that someone whispered in his ear, or is he feeling well? That kind of thing. I wonder.
Do I care? Why? No, I think it's because he was getting in trouble with.
Yeah, I think his lawyers probably were like, "Buddy,
that hadn't stopped him in the past."
Well, no, that's true, but
never did.
His wards.
Who knows?
The stock prices.
Maybe he's been on vacation.
Can you imagine Elon with a? No. all right. Here was other Stacey bait that you didn't mark, but I'm going to ask you for it, Stacey, because you wrote about this at Stacey at IoT, on IoT. Amazon being able to turn dead loved ones' voices into your digital assistant.
Ooh.
What did you guys think of that?
Amazon, last week at the ReMars Festival, the guy who's in charge of their AI efforts basically said, hey, if you give us a minute worth of someone's audio data, we can make, we can basically do anything with that data and make speak in that person's voice. And the example he then showed was a dead grandmother reading a child a bedtime story. And I really feel like I don't know what anyone was thinking when they thought this would be a good idea, but sure. And so, from an AI perspective, saying you give me a minute of someone's voice and I'll get the prosody, intonation and all of that correct and be able to figure that out just based on a minute long segment is pretty freaking cool. So I get why they were like, "Ooh, this is exciting! We could make Samuel L. Jackson in only a minute." But the idea of having your dead relative speak to you is kind of. Everyone was like, and I wrote about this because what is it?
Oh, he just pronounced it for us.
Prosody.
It's spelled with a D but pronounced with a T. So now we know. Thank you, Google.
There we go.
Thank you.
So I just asked my kid because, maybe they're a little bit more up on the up and up and would think this is cool, but they were like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And they were like, how is Amazon doing this to like make money? How are they making money? Are they going to sell this to people? And I was like, God, you are really cynical. Wow.
wonder where she got that.
I don't know. But yeah, they were like, this makes no sense, because I was like, wouldn't you like to hear my voice if I died?
And
they were
like, yeah, that's the thing.
No,
it's kind of sad.
It's not you. No, they were like, it's not you. Why would I want a robot version of you? It's not what you're saying. And they found it utterly creepy because they basically thought of it as commercializing someone's memories. And I'm with them.
How about you, Ant?
It's totally creepy. No, I want no part of that at all. On the record, I still have voicemails of my dad, but those are things that are on demand for me if I want to hear his voice again. Mm-hmm. Not actually him. Right. Yep. And it's him, you know, not something that was synthesized to just be around, you know, whenever I feel like hearing the latest Brian Culberson song or something, you know, just it's no. I think it's creepy.
No. What about, so I've seen tombstones, which talk.
Digital tombstones?
Yeah. Would you want to do that for yourself? Would you want to live on?
No, I want to be cremated, my ashes dumped in the ocean, and all of the audio and video of me basically dumped.
No, you can't take away the twigs. No.
What if my child, like, turns back and sees me unable to freaking remember how old I am and when I was married. I mean, like,
that's you're married. That's the bigger one.
You're going to be like, oh, my mom was such an idiot.
That's what. Well, I found when she started downhill. Boy, it was early.
Yeah, really?
It was in 2022.
This better stay funny in a few months. That's all I got to say.
All right. But you know what? I loved that you asked your daughter. I think that was a great angle to do. And you're careful about using your daughter in that way, but I think it was the perfect perspective to hear.
Well, I just, you know, because sometimes I'm like, am I getting old? Is technology just moving too fast for me? And they're really not a good person to ask because they're kind of a techno, not a technophobe, but they really spend more time in the real world than I think many of their peers do. So, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. As in away from screens? What do you mean by that?
They're almost 16 and they don't bring a phone with them everywhere. Like, I have to remind them. I'm like, bring your phone. I know. It's so weird.
Really?
That's
awesome. Weird.
Much respect. Much respect.
It's not, I didn't do it. Like, they just are not, like, and like their friends will text them. I mean, and they just don't. It's just not their jam. I mean, they're on TikTok. You know, we can talk about videos, and they do text, and they do all this, but they just, huge portions of their life take place with the phone.
There's no addiction to it, basically.
I don't know.
I love that. Respect.
Again, I can't take any credit.
I thought we had a story in here about a legislation. Yes, here it was. A Republican FCC commissioner, and this guy goes after everything.
Was it Brendan Carr?
Yeah, it's Brendan Carr. Exactly. It's Brendan Carr. It's Brendan Carr strikes again. And Mike Basnick's going berserk on it. Wants to tell Google and Facebook and Apple to remove TikTok because it's addictive to children.
It's addictive to adults.
Boy. Yeah, it is. Oh, and plus data.
No, I thought
data.
He was...
Data. No, no, you're right. It was surreptitious data practices. That's a different story.
Okay, you're right. I thought he was doing it because of the talk. It was BuzzFeed did the story about listening to 80 hours of TikTok executives talking about data gathering. Yes.
Oh,
and
I
so
did
that
see
was
that
was yeah. the complaint, is that TikTok's right. actually gathering all this data, but Facebook and Google are also gathering all this data. They just happen to be U.S. companies. So, and you know, I'm shrugging on that. If it were because it was addictive to children, then I'd say, sure, go ahead. Let's talk about how let's do a big conversation about dark patterns on the web. But I don't think that's what we're about to do. So
that was a different story.
And it would be the FTC, not the FCC. He has no jurisdiction on this.
That's true. That's true.
That's the other thing.
So the story I confused is that California is talking about, this is line 104, which you already had on, as if we talked about it, Ant. They could face civil liability if held to addict children in California. Meta and TikTok.
How do you define
exactly.
addiction?
How do you find, addiction?
Right. And what if they read books all the time? Are they addicted to books? This was the fear. I got Gutenberg moment. I got to have one. It's my show today.
Only so, one?
Oh, I'll find Drink. A few. Slurp. So people feared that children were going to be addicted to books, that women were going to be addicted to fiction, that it was going to ruin their morals. Get ready. It is a classic moral panic. Well done, Ant. Well done. You were warned.
I will say I am addicted to fiction and books.
Yeah, exactly. It's a choice we make. And so it's the demonizing of it. So to step in and say that you're going to sue the companies because they're addicting children is just using children to be. It just strikes me that way. I don't know.
Again, if we want to talk about dark patterns and things that help get children addicted, let's do it. But I don't see that happening. And everything else is just stupid politics. Stupid politics. Okay.
It is. Well, speaking of stupid politics, I'm going to steal one of my numbers for myself. All the way down in my numbers, Jeremy, you'll see a story about Ofcom, which is the British regulator that is soon going to be regulating based on the UK's harmful content law, which is going to be enforced by the end of the year. And Ofcom regularly does surveys of the world of online. And so they did one, and I dug into it at some length. And what was fascinating to me, so they asked people about 20 potential harms encountered in the past 4 weeks. So number one, 27%, scams, fraud, and phishing. Yes, I also get that on my phone. I get that in the mail. I get that everywhere. Then number two is misinformation. Well, should we try to define that? What do you call misinformation? Number three was offensive or bad language. Bad language? I could get Jammer B nervous right now by using a few words, but I won't. that's seen as a harm. Using the S word or BS is a harm. I'm trying to figure out what the S word was, weren't you? I know.
I'm trying to remember my child once came home and said that they were probably like 6 years old, and they're like, they said the S word at school today. I was like, holy cow, really?
And holy S.
They said survey.
They said, no. They said stupid. And I was like, oh.
That's bad. Yeah. Unwelcome fellow friend requests. You ignore them. What's the harm? So then it goes to things that are harmful, in fact. Or another one is content encouraging gambling. That's legal in the UK, and most major newspapers make money off of it by encouraging gambling. Now, there's things that are serious here, right? Trolling, hateful, discriminatory content against groups, depicting violence. Well, that's entertainment. Content that objectifies, demeans, or otherwise negatively portrays women. So I'm not saying there's not serious stuff here, but when you get down to that, you're getting down to 8% of the people said that it was a problem. So then you look and say, well, how many people complained? 15% were really bothered. Then Ofcom, to its credit, asked people about the positive end of the internet. I was impressed with that, right? So the statement, being online has a overall positive effect on my mental health. Only 14% disagreed with that. So the vast half being British.
Wow. Those people aren't doom scrolling in the afternoon.
Man. But they're not. They're saying it's most people say, yes, it has a positive effect on my mental health. Then how about this? Well,
that's
how about addiction? We just talked about addiction.
Are those people on Twitter?
Well, actually, there is part of that in the survey, but I don't have that in my post, Ant. So you got to ask the question. I don't have the answer to. Thanks a lot, Ant. Thanks a lot.
Good job, Ant.
Good job. 14%.
I know.
That's a lot of people. This is,
For only 14% disagree. The rest say it has a positive effect on my mental health. Then how about the statement?
There's a lot of people that's fine with this.
And
again, if I open Twitter right now, which I've had to slow down a bit on it the last week and a half or so, there's so much anger and hate, rightfully so. There's no way I would have assumed 86% was like, yeah, my mental health's great. Right now.
Well, it's actually about half here. It's so small, I can't see. 40% shrug and say, mox nix, doesn't matter. But 33 plus 10, 43% said, yes, it has a positive effect on my mental health. The next one is the statement, I feel I have a good balance between my online and offline life. Oh, yeah, people just cannot get rid of this stuff, right? 74% said, yes, I have a fine balance. Thank you very much.
Narcissists, they're lying.
Three quarters. Oh, aunt.
I have a good balance between my online and offline life.
They are lying.
Me too. I can share opinions and have a voice. 44% agree with that. I feel more free to be myself online. A third agree. Almost a fifth disagree. All right. Many
are you
people.
Yourself online, Jeff?
I feel free to be myself online. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, are you
what else
aunt?
Do I do? Jeez. Aunt, do you feel free to be yourself online?
Oh, yeah. I definitely feel free. People don't agree with it, but I definitely feel free.
So, Stacey, we don't know the real you then?
You know an accurate and authentic version of me, but you do not know me.
Me.
I would never bring my whole self to the internet. For example.
Oh, okay.
Aunt,
well, all right.
Aunt
well,
you're right.
That.
She's a spy.
Yeah.
She's a spy.
It's true.
The COVID is making her admit it again and again and again, but she's a spy. She's telling us it's a fake Stacey we see.
If Miss Stacey is saying, you know, I share a lot, but I'm not going to share everything, then yeah, that's me. You know, I'm not telling the whole internet.
No, I don't either.
My whole private life, no. But for the most part,
well,
from a personality standpoint, you get me. You know, from a personality standpoint, you're going to get Aunt Pruitt.
So then, the question is, do people feel like they're overwhelmed by the internet? How much confidence do they have as an internet user, right? So they were asked, do you have overall confidence as an internet user? 79% call themselves very or fairly confident as internet users. Only 8% said, not so much. What about advertising?
Guy every Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, they are Leo's audience, and let's not make fun of them. So then what about online advertising? Are you confident you can recognize online advertising? 78% said yes. 7% said no. Well, data. Data's a problem, right? Surely they feel they've lost control of that. A majority, 58%, said they are confident managing their data. 18% said no. News. Do you feel confident judging the truthfulness of online information? 69% said yes. 9% said feel otherwise. So
okay,
then we get.
My father doesn't believe in the election that Biden actually won the election, but he's also confident
so he thinks he
in his
can,
ability to
he's confident
judge
that he's got
news.
It right. Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
So, but here's the interesting thing to me: then it comes around. So all that is asking about you, UK citizen. How do you feel about you and the internet? And people feel pretty good about themselves on the internet. It's useful. They feel in control. They're confident. Then they asked about the others. Agreement with the statement that internet users must be protected from seeing inappropriate or offensive content. Well, there, the third person effect comes in. Because most people say, oh yeah, they need help. I'm fine. But they need help, which is the third person effect. Which is, I'm okay, but surely we've got to regulate for others. What this says, basically, is this becomes the basis for regulation. Is, well, I'm okay, but boy, we got to do something about everybody else. And I was fascinated by this because the Ofcom data, and I'm reading it in a snarky way because that's me, because I feel okay to be myself online, and I am snarky, is saying that there isn't this crying demand from the citizenry saying, I'm overwhelmed, we're being screwed up, you've got to do something, you've got to regulate the internet for us. Most people said, yeah, I'm fine, okay. I found that fascinating.
What I'm seeing is my view of the internet, and I have to forget that, you know, the internet is vast. I have to remember that the internet is vast. It's not just my view.
So. True. Everybody sees a different internet. Absolutely everybody sees a different internet. All right, we should go back to our friend Leo. Over to you, Leo.
Hey, I just want to interrupt briefly to tell you about something I'm very familiar with, HackerRank. Now, I'm not looking for work, although a lot of people looking, a lot of coders looking for work, go to HackerRank. Employers looking for the best technical talent, go to HackerRank. I just like HackerRank because I take the puzzles and get ranked and all that stuff, and that's a lot of fun. Let me tell you, if you're doing technical interviews, especially nowadays with remote work, work from home, a lot of those interviews are over the phone, over a conference call, right? You're going to love HackerRank's new IDE for technical interviews. It's an integrated development environment designed to take all the fuss out of a technical interview. In fact, you might like it so much you'll just do them all this way from now on. No more in-person interviews. It comes with 2,500 questions pre-made for every possible skill and skill level, so you don't have to think up new problems to give your interviewees. You can use their custom library. There's a code playback feature. Sometimes, you know, you give them a code problem and they're fast and they're talking fast. This way you can slow it down. You can play it back. You can see how their approach. You can score them on the skill levels as you're watching. There's also a whiteboard. You know, that's one thing that's missing now that we're doing these remotely. But now you have a shared whiteboard so you can problem solve together and you can see how your candidate solves problems. This is so much better than the old way of doing this. I don't think you're going to do in-person interviews anymore. Reboot your technical interview process with HackerRank. Click interview, done. You could start using HackerRank free right now. See how much better a technical interview can be. Reboot your technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. Again, the pre-made question library, that's a boon. That's fantastic. And they're always adding new questions to it, so it stays fresh. You've got code playback. So, you know, it's like instant replay. If you're watching somebody, what did he just do there? You can instant replay it. The built-in whiteboard for collaboration. You'll be conducting better technical interviews, instantly identifying the right talent. The best talent is already there at HackerRank. This is just a no-brainer. HackerRank.com/twig to start a better tech interview for free today. HackerRank.com/twig. We thank him so much for supporting This Week in Google. HackerRank.com/twig. And now, back to Twig.
Thank you, Leo. And I'm still worried that Leo doesn't know where he is. Do we know where Leo is?
That dude, he barely knows his schedule. Remember last week he thought it was Tuesday while we were doing the show? He's never done Twig on a Tuesday. So why would he expect? Why would we?
All right, I know, but he said he's on the boat. I don't know. That's Leo was confused.
Have you seen the Mach-E? I guess it does look like a boat cabin on the inside, right?
So you marked a story that I found interesting, too. Google looks to reduce pushback bias in developer software code review. And I didn't, since I'm not a coder, I didn't really understand that there's anonymous, or there's software review where people judge your stuff, and that they're finding that when people know it's Black, Latinx, Asian, women face more code pushback than white male engineers, and as a result, it costs more money to go back and deal with all of these reviews. So they're thinking of switching to anonymous review. I found that interesting, to say the least.
I saw that, and I guess I was a bit naive. I assumed that a code review was code review. You know, I've been in that, what is it called? The SDLC, Software Development Lifecycle, where the developers, they put their code in place and so forth, and they have to test it out, and then it goes through a code review from one of their peers. And, well, not one of their peers, a group of their peers to make sure things are right. And there's a lot of back and forth on that. So I just assume that it's a situation where everybody's on the same team and has the same goal of, we want to get this product out and successful and bug-free. Of course, it's never going to be bug-free, but everything is bug-free.
Right. Everything is politics. The numbers of the story.
I was from naive. A Google study. I had no idea that it was that, and I totally commend
it. Makes sense when you know it.
Yeah.
So the numbers are this. To do this. They found that at Google, women face 21% higher odds of pushback than men during code review. Black developers 54% higher than white developers. Latinx 15% higher. Asian 42% higher, given a high population of Asian developers. This is shocking.
Is it though?
And I'm not surprised once I know it. I'm not surprised once I know it. But it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
I was totally naive. I would have never guessed it. But again, that's me looking at the world to my own view because of the situations I've been in. And yep. in those different offices and departments, it was a legit team effort, just like if I were playing ball.
You didn't feel you saw
not that kind one of time.
Stacey, what about from editing?
From editing?
Did you feel you got treated differently?
Yes. Sometimes. I mean, it depends on the editor, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, and I also got treated differently when I was editing someone and how they would react to my edits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
what Google's thinking of doing is switching to an anonymous system. And I'm not really in the academe, right? I'm a poseur, I'm a faker, I'm just a journalism professor. But my new book coming out, Gutenberg Parenthesis, is being put out by an academic press. So it was sent out for review. And I was nervous as hell what was going to happen. And it was sent out to, I didn't know who it was sent back to. I got a note back, which was helpful. It was supportive, but also critical in some areas. And I deserve the criticism in those areas. And I changed the book as a result. And then, interestingly, the reviewer decided to out himself. And somebody I respect greatly, I knew of. And he did that, I thought, was a very generous act, because then that allowed me to have a conversation with him about the book and ask questions in greater detail. But I always hear in the academe, you always hear the joke about reviewer number two. The reviewer number two basically is going to tell you that you didn't cite my book, so but I'm not saying it's my book because I'm anonymous, but I'm going to tear you over the coals because you didn't take my book. And so anonymity has its political issues too. But I think this makes perfect sense given the data here that, geez, they should switch to anonymous. Stacey?
Well, it's possible depending. I mean, like, as an editor, like, or as a writer and as an editor, really, knowing whose work I was editing or whose work I was, who was editing my work, I'm not going to lie. When I was at Fortune, some of my editors had no freaking clue about what I was writing about. And, you know, I tried to explain it, and I would always try to take their, like, oh, I clearly did not explain this well. But, you know, there were some things that I was just like, oh, God, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay,
yeah.
No. And I could easily figure that out based on who was editing me. And I don't know if that's good or not now that I think about it. I'm like, maybe I would have been a better writer if I had just said, clearly I'm not making my point across to everyone. But can you? I don't know.
I have become editorially feral. Blogging did it to me. Right? I don't want to edit.
I can't imagine when you were not feral, when you were constrained.
Hey. Yeah. No, in fact, I'm nervous about the book because I almost wish there were another reviewer because it's a big project and I don't want to screw up. And so I want that backup. But yeah, when it comes to just basic, I have pulled magazine pieces because they butchered them, and I said, no, I'm not doing it. Just not doing it. I'm too old now. Bye. Then I go meow under a porch somewhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll argue with people, but I'm typically like, I love editing. I love my editors. I think they're the best people on the planet most of the time. So,
but you've had some bad. Tell me, you've had some bad editors.
Oh my God, I've had terrible editors.
Oh yeah.
But looking at code review versus you all in your writing, that code is either going to run or it ain't. And if it does run, can it run more efficiently if you have specific calls and stuff like that? That's why I was so naive to all of this, because I figured, you know, when the review comes in and the reviewing team says, you know what, maybe you should look at this function, or maybe you should look at this call, whatever. I figure that's just for the better of the team. I would have never assumed this was, oh gosh, this woman doesn't know what she's talking about. Look at this. She doesn't understand inheritance and whatever. You know, I would have never thought that.
But would it matter if, like, someone was an expert in Go versus, don't know, Erlang or Java, or, you know, like, that's when the who might matter in a code review. But I don't really know if you're just saying, hey, does it work or not?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Hello, experts, of which we are not any.
Well, exactly. Right. Leo, as a coder, would be able to say better. Yeah, I guess one of the issues, does it run or not, is key. Is it efficient and elegant or not? Efficient or not is a key.
Efficient. Elegance is a whole other thing. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's better code. Documentation. Yeah, I think I sympathize with you, Ant. It would seem to me these are more rational things, which is why, again, the data bias is never surprising. But bias in this area at that level is kind of surprising just because it's people going after people. You know, technology is a funny thing. When I worked at Time Inc., we had fights over what editorial systems to buy, and I was in the middle of those fights. And I was always amazed how people could spend political capital over something so boring as what computer we wrote on. But people just they use any opportunity to be over somebody else and use power in that way. And it comes out in all kinds of weird ways, like technology. So, Stacey, you mentioned a story earlier that you then oohed and decided to do a different story. But I'm curious about this one. The story about Google telling you how much carbon footprint you have in your workspace.
Oh, yeah. So this is basically more of, you remember how Google was like, hey, world, we're going to show you the most efficient way, like in Maps, or give you when you Google for flight information, we'll show you the most carbon neutral, carbon efficient. Mm-hmm. The one that uses the least amount, that emits the least amount of carbon dioxide into the air, we'll show you those and rank those for you. They're starting to take that to cloud computing workloads. So you can actually, in Workspace, if you have a Google account and a Google Cloud account, you can build your jobs and assess how carbon neutral or carbon, how much carbon they emit. That's really what they're doing. So
here's my question about this one. Go ahead. No, go ahead. You give your examples first.
Oh, it could be things like, hey, where is this located? Where is the data center located? How efficient are the servers in that data center? I don't know if it looks at your code or not. I thought it might. So those are the kind of things it's looking for.
But here's what got me about this. Isn't that really a matter of Google rather than the user? In other words, if Google used 100% renewable energy, then this wouldn't be an issue. It's an issue because Google doesn't yet use 100% renewable energy.
Well, Google can't use 100% renewable energy everywhere because we don't have that. So even in its most renewable-friendly places, it's still like, if you're computing something, if it's a workload that's happening in the middle of the night and there's no solar power, then it's not running on renewables. Decisions on... So it may be like, what time can this workload run only during the day? Maybe, you know. So it's basically just trying to make a lot of that more transparent. And this is a little bit greenwashing, I'll be honest. But mm-hmm. we're also seeing, with the ESG goals of companies being reported to the SEC, just more attention on this overall, the entire accountability industry, we're starting to see a lot of things happen around that. And it's really fascinating. So this is an effort from Google. We'll probably see similar efforts from other cloud providers. And we're seeing it all over the place. And I think it's kind of cool because we're starting to externalize some of the costs associated with things that are not just based on like ROI. So not just like the cash outlays and inlays, right? We're starting to think about how this affects the environment. So it's kind of positive. It's greenwashing, but it's also a little bit positive.
Okay. But it should, but at some level, the big decisions here are not the users. The big decisions are Google's.
Well,
they're going to have the most impact.
Yes, but if Google can tempt you to do a more efficient code, they should.
Like a power company, you're saying. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, hey, what if you ran this over here? It's a much cleaner data center. I mean, some places they have not great data centers because they don't have, like, that's the closest they can get, and that's what they could get, you know, like. You can't just pop a data. It's not easy to build a whole new data center somewhere because they consume a ton of power. They require lots of water and resources. So sometimes you just got to work with what you have.
Got it.
Here's a whole thing on Google's. Let's see. Oh, they say they have 100% renewable energy for all cloud regions. Look at that.
Well, that's what I thought. So how? I don't understand. I'm confused again.
I don't believe them.
Okay. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't believe you, Google. Let's see.
Did you find anything in there?
Maybe it's... this could just be a sales tool. Like, don't host it yourself. Work with us. You'll save this much in carbon.
Oh, I see.
I thought it was much more.
Well, never mind. Then I just gave them free publicity. Speaking of which, it's a vote. Do we do a changelog or not?
I like the changelog.
Do it. It's still Google. Do it.
All right. Let's hear the trumpets.
The Google changelog.
See, here's a confession I have. During the changelog, I don't get any waffles, but I do kind of take a breath. I figure Leo's going to go through it. He's going to explain it all to us, and I don't pay a lot of attention. I read most everything else in the rundown. I don't really pay attention to the changelog. But today, I have to pay attention to the damn changelog, and you just made me do it because it's a democracy. Okay.
Sorry, Jeff. So, I didn't know this was going to hurt you.
It does. So I put this one in here, so I find this interesting. So I'll start here. Google is paying the Wikimedia Foundation for better access to information. What this story is really about is Wikimedia has created an enterprise version of itself. That yes, you can scrape Wikimedia. Yes, it's the license allows anybody to take it. You can make books out of it if you want. You can do whatever you want. But now Wikimedia is doing a premium version for companies that if you want to get better access to their data, then you can use this. And it's a way for Google to then say, well, we don't pay for content. We're paying for the executive plan, and I think everybody wins here. Wikimedia is something we love. And they're getting more resources as a result for being used, even though it's free, and you can use it for free. You don't have to pay. But we're giving you a way you can if you want to, which I think is smart. That's that way. See, that's the problem with the changelog. There's not really a lot of discussion. It's kind of, okay, yeah.
Hangouts ends in November. I am sad.
Yeah. Please continue. That's all you can do.
You jumped ahead of the changelog, Stacey. You jumped ahead here.
Oh, we don't ever cover all the stories or go in order.
Never.
That's true, we don't. That's true. What? I screwed up. That one wasn't even in the changelog. That was
it. Wasn't in the changelog, but it is now.
Okay. I was like, it's right there. It's 9152.
I was looking at the Google section. All right. No. Now Chromebooks. Well, I care about this one too. Chromebooks in the new OS 103, which I tried to get today and I didn't, have all kinds of new neat features, which make us Chromebook people even smarter than we already were. One, screencasting officially arrives in Chrome OS 103. I didn't know it wasn't there before, but that's fine. That's a nice thing to have. Two, use nearby share to get a Chromebook online. What does that mean? I don't even know.
Not sure.
This is one for Android users because it's not supported by iOS. I think you could use it for your phone. Okay. Recent phone photos appear on your Chromebook, which if you have... The way my phone is set up, my phone photos appear in Google Photos anyway, so they do appear on the Chromebooks. I'm confused there, but fine. Zip file extraction works as it does on other operating systems. Good, but nobody should use Zip anymore. Why does anybody use Zip anymore? I hate Zip.
Why not use it?
Why not use it? Is it just because you hate it?
Yeah, it's just because I hate it, because once you send me the files, I'll take the files. I've got to break it up into the files, and I got to figure out where they are, and all that. Just send me the files.
This sounds like a biased code review. Yeah, I'm like, exactly. What is happening here?
I don't like Zip. Zip is so 2002.
It's a pain in the butt, but I get it.
Are you sure you're
not
thinking of Zip drives, like the little funky iOmega things?
Grandpa?
No. Grandpa moment.
Yeah. Play Store search in Chrome OS launcher. I just don't care. So I'll keep going. And I am a Chromebook guy. I don't care. Save virtual desk templates for later use.
I'm trying to figure out where the heck you are.
Where are you getting this from?
I'm in the story. I'm the About Chromebook story from our friend Kevin.
Okay.
Number seven, updated terminal for Linux on Chromebooks. Well, Kevin likes that.
Because he codes on his Chromebook.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And Bluetooth fast pair is coming to Chromebooks. Okay, so we've done that. So, Kevin, thank you for that. You made that as easy as you could have made that. Back to the rundown. Google Hangouts is shutting down in November. Okay, there we are now. Finally. How many times have we done this story? How many times have we talked about Hangouts and chat and all this stuff?
And how many times has it counted?
And the joke is, it would happen sooner, but the Google people can't agree which communications application to use to talk about it. Because they have too many and they don't know what the name is.
That's
funny. It is funny. It's not my joke. It's somebody else's.
We need
else
a
rim
shot for that, Grammar B.
Yeah, exactly. Gmail gets Material U web redesign and Gmail only view without chat or meet. Oh, I like that. I find that irritating.
Yeah, you complain about that a lot. So, yay.
Yeah, so that's good. That's fine. Okay, that's good. All right. So, yeah, well, all right. And then closing it out here. Chrome for iOS is getting better protections against malicious sites. I don't care. That's the end of the change log.
Wait, it's not.
Okay, wait, says Stacey. Wait, no.
Oh, it's too late.
It's too late. Go ahead, Stacey.
Scooter X threw something in there that's worth mentioning in the IRC. He's got a 9-to-5 story about how to download your Google Hangouts data before it shuts down for good.
Oh, good.
If you want to grab your Hangouts data, which feels like a lot, you have to go to Google Takeout. You have to use the web, so you can't do this like on the mobile, but go to the web. Well, you can't do it on a mobile, but anyway, you go to Google Takeout, and then you will
give you a zip file.
Deselect everything except for your Hangouts data, and then export it and create the file, and voila, you have everything. Ta-da! I've never used Google Takeout. Have y'all?
I have.
I didn't even know that existed.
Once, yeah. Yeah. It's one of the ethical things they do. Yeah, it's a good thing to have. Well, thank you. So now we're going to end the change log again, Jeremy. Otherwise, the universe would not be in order. We can't do. Change
you don't want to
things.
Talk about Fuchsia being on the Nest Hub Max after all the
sure,
time we've spent speculating on Fuchsia,
and it actually exists as an operating system. Talk about it.
Well, we knew it was, we knew they were making it, and we knew it was kind of for things, is what we figured out. It's for running on all kinds of things, a wide variety of computing platforms, which is important for IoT. And now they're making it available for people on the Nest Hub Max if you want to use it. Your first-gen Nest Hub is probably running on Fuchsia today, and now you can now put it on your Nest Hub Max if you want. So,
What will it enable you to do that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to do?
No one knows.
Oh. Do you
it's
have
an
any
operating
idea
system.
What's the,
so,
what's the use well, for Fuchsia so, going to be? Why are they doing it? Does this
so you
reveal
can build
anything?
Easily. So you can build software. So an operating system sits on your hardware and ties your software that's like your applications. It lets them. It's an abstraction layer, so all kinds of applications can run on the hardware, right? And make use of the hardware resources a computer has available to you. So Fuchsia is normally you build an operating system for like phones only, right? Computers only is historically what we've done, or weird embedded devices only. And so what's happening is you want things to run on a phone or on a computer, or on a thermostat, or on a display, or on a smart TV. And so Fuchsia is designed to be an operating system that can span all of those things, so you could build an app that could run on all of those things without you having to do like an Android app, or a Nest Home Hub app, or Chromecast app. Did that help?
Yes, it did. Thank you. So, queen of IoT... you're probably going to say, this is stupid, Jeff. Why did you put this in here? It's so passe, it's so meaningless. But I'm curious what you say about the fingerbot on line 166.
The hell is a fingerbot? Oh, no, I just...
Oh, I gotcha.
You got so me,
FingerBot,
Jeff.
It's only a tweet, so it doesn't take long to read into it. A tweet with a little video here from Mashable. We got to go through the ad. A FingerBot lets you turn on and off traditional things. It's just simply a button pusher.
Oh, it's like an IoT a SwitchBot.
Button pusher. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, so
there's a million of these.
There are. That's what I was going to ask. Okay, there are. Do you actually use
this?
Any
is
yourself?
A pretty one.
It is. Nice.
I don't, because I don't have anything that really. Most of the devices I've bought lately,
you've already are a generation beyond. Yes, you don't have.
Yeah, one. But
you peasants.
Like, if you have a popular use case, would be like a coffee machine. So being able to set a timer for your coffee machine, because a lot of people have coffee machines that, you know, even if you turn it on, you have to press a button for it to actually go. So that would be useful for those people.
Okay.
They look stupid, though, for things like light switches. Oh, my God. If you're going to do that, just pay the money and just install a connected light switch. But, you know, if you like your coffee machine, or if you have, like, a cool bespoke kind of device, then, yeah, these make sense.
All right. Good. So I've never been a gamer. I don't care about games. But I guess we should note that this is Atari's 50th birthday.
I thought it was Nintendo's 50th birthday. Go Atari.
Atari. Does this mean anything to you in your childhoods?
Yeah, we had an Atari.
I remember the neighbors had one, and then we got one the following year. It was pretty badass. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Combat. What went wrong with Atari? It was Nolan Bushnell. It was the hot thing. It was everything. Pong. Was it just you can't be on top forever, or what went wrong?
Was it innovation? I don't know, because after that, everything went into those 8-bits and you know, higher graphic games, where Atari was nowhere near that. Maybe that's what it was. They just didn't innovate. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
those
sorry.
Stories.
I was a kid.
I know Steve Jobs was there, but that's about it. And swindled Mr. Wozniak.
Wasn't
Atari? Mr. Wozniak, did he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They worked in there, right. Yeah, that's where Steve didn't bathe. Unlike Stacy, who does.
Steve didn't all the bathe. Time. Just constantly bathing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Nolan Bushnell left, or after Atari, he started Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Chuck E. Cheese, which no longer has animatronic animals, right? Didn't they get rid of them?
Creep all the kids out.
I've seen great pictures of them found in junkyards. That's just the most dystopian thing you can imagine. Is a Chuck E. Cheese character torn apart in a junkyard. It's beautiful. I'd want one just for that. All right, I'm going to do a story that's going to make Jammerby all nervous, and it's going to make his head explode. But don't worry, Jammerby. We're not going to say any dirty words. This is line 172. This is compound pejoratives on Reddit. And so it's a data set of putting together bad words, right? Because we all like to do that. So, you know, like, you jerkhead. So it's like things we used to do in second grade. You snot wagon. Cameron be still nervous. I'm going to say something bad. So far, I haven't.
I'm nervous because I'm thinking of snot wagons. Gross.
So there's a nice matrix of perjuration here, where you can put together words. Now, I think the challenge we should have here for just a moment here is to come up with bad words that do not make Jammer be nervous. Like, I'll start. You are a dip waffle. Okay, you try one now. Find one from column A and one from the X and one from the Y that doesn't make Jammer B's head explode.
I don't know, dude.
You can do it. You can do it.
I'm not clever enough.
They're
all pernicious here. Soup noodle.
That's there you go. A soup noodle. It's not. Oh, you cheated, Stacy. You cheated.
How is that cheating? It's harder to come up with things like soup noodle without a matrix.
Well, you're
actually
just a Trump
stick.
In
my current state, it's it's very easy. Yeah.
Actually, you need a chart. Yes.
I don't know where we are in the
such
ad.
A big Trumplet. I don't know.
You scroll down.
Is
to
that
the chart
implying
there.
That Trump's an insult?
Yeah, Which
did liberals create this, Jeff?
You're just a poop goblin. All right,
there's
well, that
so
was
many on this
true.
Chart.
There are so many words we can't say. So many words. Yes. Jeremy's sitting over there saying, "Please don't say it. Please don't say it. Please don't. Please don't." You are a scum sucker. Now that's one that's kind of known, right? You're a dirt face. All right. Well, we'll end this right now. So,
can we call someone a wank nozzle?
You can't
like
even
that.
Say that.
A wank nozzle.
I don't think so. Not anymore.
Is yeah. wank nozzle not? I don't know.
You can't.
I don't. Well,
I could call someone a scum nugget. Oh, I kind of like that one. I'm gonna.
That's
call
nice. That's nice. A scum nugget. See, I knew you'd like.
You're such
that.
A scum
I knew
nugget.
You'd get into it.
All right.
All right. There's 100 show titles that we shouldn't use either. Can you explain this one to me, Ant? The rise of the 0.5 selfie.
No, because I don't like selfies.
People are taking ugly selfies. Done.
I don't like selfies at all. I am so against selfies. I don't have a problem with self-portraits, which I've done a whole episode on hands-on photography. But, yeah, no, I don't know what this is.
So they're just using the wide-angle lens to take a selfie, which makes them look stupid.
That's the worst right? thing to do. Those lenses have so much distortion in them. Don't do that. That's
what, I had a photographer at my wedding, which we're unclear how many years ago it was, but my mother-in-law really wanted her entire family, like a photo of their entire family at the wedding. And my mother-in-law is very like studio portrait. And my photographer at my wedding was a photojournalist because I wanted those like real candid, like truly candid, but pretty, right? So I love them. My mother-in-law hated them. And then when she got to the photo of the like portrait of her entire family stuck together, because my photographer was not like, she didn't do that sort of thing. She used a fisheye lens. And everyone looks so terrible.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, not a fisheye. A wide angle lens. Is that a fisheye?
Wide angle lens.
No, well,
it's a wide angle lens.
Fisheye is even wider than the wide angle.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well, because it was a huge group of people, like all just standing there like this.
So you're all distorted?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, it didn't bother me at all, but she was like, I can't use this. I was like, sorry.
Oh, man.
Oh, well. All right. I think we're heading toward the end here, but what else do we see on the, what have I missed? What have we missed here on the whole rundown? Anything that excites you?
No, waffles.
We've covered a good day.
We've covered waffles, a fair amount says. Today. We covered a fair amount. Well, we have the burger that Instagram built. We didn't do that one.
Oh, that was a Stacy story, I believe.
That's a Stacy story.
Did
have
I
you
accept
heard
that
of
story?
Monty's? You put your initials by it. It's yours now. You can't. No. You break it. You bought it.
You own it now.
Okay. What about this?
Monty's Good Burger chain in L.A. Go ahead.
It's an L.A. burger chain that uses vegan or vegetarian burgers or burgers without meat, meatless burgers. And basically the three founders, I thought this was a stupid story. I think that's why I marked it. I was like, this is silly. But basically,
of course,
they're friends with the people who do Coachella. So they had a lot of famous people eat at their place. And when famous people eat there, they're like, these are delicious. I'd love to take a picture. And so then they share that with their sizable audience. And of voila, course. Monty's is now famous.
Easy advertisement, basically.
Yeah, free right. advertising. Absolutely free. Use celebrities to eat your burgers. By the way, you know, I'm okay with the new meatless burgers. I've had them. I had them in San Francisco. I think they're fine. But I think that when I see veggie burger on a menu, I want a black bean burger. I don't want a burger that thinks it's meat when it's not. If it says a veggie burger,
they
want
sell
it to be a veggie burger.
No, they sell it.
No,
they're branded.
Now they fool you.
Like, no, they tell you it's a black bean burger, or they say it's an impossible burger, or they don't. You don't just. No one puts a veggie burger and gives you like an impossible burger.
It's hard to find black bean burgers anymore, which is pissing me off because I like a good black bean burger.
Oh, well, you should come live in the West Coast because they're everywhere here.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, or you just buy like a Boca burger if you want one at home.
I know. Oh, well. I was amused by this one. The maker of Bored Ape NFTs is suing an artist for profiting off copycat images. Like, you can't just make a stupid picture of a stupid ape. Anybody can. You don't own the idea to make dumb apes. But now you're saying, but I didn't realize that sometimes these things are used for, of course, added benefits. And people think they're going to get the added benefits. So I don't know. Anne, are you doing NFTs still? Are you finding that still useful?
They're out there, but I'm not pushing them. I'm not pushing them. My audience, as I said before, they want the physical piece of art in your hand.
Yeah.
So as you see in that lower third there, antpruitt.com/prints is where you can get some old school NFTs.
Well done. Well played, Mr. Pruitt. Well played. So this is related to another story which I found amusing. The Times called them accidental media critics of YouTube, which is basically people saying that they're using YouTube to criticize. They're not accidental. They're not media. They're just people on saying what they can say because you can now. But the funny thing is they're going after, after Gary Vaynerchuk because he's an easy target. He makes himself such an easy. And I know Gary. I like Gary. But, yeah, he's an easy target for criticism because he's made himself into such a
guru.
A bored ape character himself, right? It's just he's kind of a made up human NFT at this point. So people are spending a whole hour critiquing Gary V online, which I've got to watch now. I haven't watched it, but I found that amusing.
Well, so. Again, they have the platform with YouTube. It's free to do. You got your voice. You can clearly have at it. That's the beauty and the sometimes sad part of the internet.
They call Vaynerchuk the youth pastor of capitalism, which is pretty funny too, I think.
Oh, that is hilarious.
How come that's not on the insult table? I respect Vaynerchuk. I can never say his last name. I respect
that's why it's Gary V.
I never really totally signed off on the whole hustle, don't sleep narrative. But I do believe in hustle. I do believe in putting in the work and grinding. I just hate the fact that he seemed to be the person that originate the message of all of you people out there wanting to be entrepreneurs need to work 80 hours a week and don't sleep and end up having serious mental health problems because things aren't going the way you thought they would go. And, you know, I don't think that was right. And I don't know if he ever really changed that narrative about hustle, don't sleep, but I couldn't totally sign off on that.
Yeah, there's other people online. Even before we got to YouTube, there are all these people who write sales books, how to sell, and they just come up with those lines, and you write down those lines and think your life has changed. I'm going to be rich now, and yeah, it's a genre of human beings. I love this line in the New York Times story because I want to make fun of it. Even in a world with no gatekeepers and limited moderation, a certain savvy will assert itself. Like, oh, yes, even if you don't work for the New York Times, you can be savvy. All right, I'm getting grumpy now. I think it's probably time. Don't you?
I think it's Stacey, time for Cacio e Pepe. What do you think?
Stacey is waffle-eyes right now. We're going to do that, but I think we're heading into anything else here. I think we've done it all. We've done it all.
Yeah, Leo, this is
come
the
back.
Most I've
Wherever
seen
you
us
are.
Do.
We've been doing this for 2.5 hours, so this is not like a sad show.
We're not shirking.
I mean, you have plowed through a lot of stories, sir. I mean,
I think we've actually covered more stories than we would with Leo.
We all did it together.
Yeah. This is
shall we sing?
All right, so we're gonna. And I'm gonna start with you for your thing
for the pick,
whatever of the week. Yes.
All right. Well, my first one is Aero Quartet. This past weekend, it was this weekend, I shot some video and went to pull it off of the SSD to put it on a computer so I could do the processing and whatnot. And the very last file on the card was corrupt. Just totally bizarre. I could see it when I dragged it to the computer. It showed that this thing was, you know, umpteen gigs in size as it should have been, but it would not play. And I put it on my camera and it would play on my camera. So I'm like, something's really odd with this. And I couldn't figure out what to do. And the Twit IT guy gave me several suggestions to try. Mr. Burt gave me several suggestions to try. But I ended up stumbling upon this service, aeroquartet.com. And I think it's called Treasured something other. And they have this utility that allows you to see if they can recover your busted video files. You upload it, and if they can fix it, they tell you, yep, we can fix it. If they can't, they tell you they can't. And they'll give you a quote to fix it. And it was, I ended up having another solution right after I found that. But it was, but I thought it was brilliant. And I was like, oh, this is great. Because a lot of those things, you buy the software and then end up, it still didn't work, you know, because it was another problem.
Yeah.
Did they give you a price?
I even looked at, pardon?
Did they give you a price? What would the price have been?
Yeah, they gave me a quote. And for mine, it would have been like $70, something like that, which was totally worth it for what it for what the footage was. But for example, our very own Mr. Steve Gibson, he has that utility SpinRite. After speaking with him, SpinRite wouldn't have worked for me. It's just I would have paid for it and it wouldn't have done me any good. I still wouldn't have been able to get to my data. But this one here, it was totally worth it. And I didn't have to pay anything, but it's nice to know that they were like, hey, if we can fix it, yeah, we got you. But if not, here's your quote. And if not, you go on about your day. So I like that. And my next pick is Nikon. They announced a new camera, bright and early over there, but it was actually more like last night here. It's a new mirrorless camera, an APS-C crop sensor. It's the Z30 or Z30, depending on where you live. This is budget friendly. You can get it. You can get the body and a kit lens. I think it's a 16-55mm kit lens for $846. They're trying to push this towards the vloggers. I believe it's got a 20 megapixel sensor for stills, shoot 11 frames per second if you want to do somewhat high speed. But video, you get up to 4K at 30 frames per second. So again, because it's budget, you're not going to be able to get 4K 60 or 4K 120, but you can get HD in 120 frames per second if you want to do slow-mo. So that's my other pick.
Good. Stacey?
I'm going with cooking. And I'm sorry, I haven't been doing a lot of connected devices. One, I haven't been trying a lot of them because I've been kind of this is a travel season for me. Well, but
you've had a few difficult weeks of disease.
Oh, well, yeah. And also, I'm just kind of
being stuck in hotels. For a while, what was the total amount of time you were stuck in hotels between the two episodes?
14 plus 7. 21.
That's amazing. Yeah, so
21 or 22 days. Oh, no, I forgot about the additional 2 days. So 23 days in a hotel.
Jeez. Whew. Jeez. Wow. Thank you, COVID.
Hello. All right. My pick is it's another gift I got from my husband for Father's Day. I'm just rolling through these out. But this one is the June egg pan. You have to have a June oven. Actually, maybe you don't. Okay. I don't know. But if you have a June oven, God, get this thing. It's amazeballs. You can make perfect sunny side up eggs. I know you can put them in a fry pan, but I always have a little issue. They're slimy on top, but they're too cooked on the bottom sometimes. This doesn't happen. And.
Nice.
And. Wow. And here's the secret thing. Instead of, it doesn't just do eggs. If you put muffin batter in it, it makes only muffin tops.
Muffin tops.
That's right, yo.
Muffin
only
tops.
Muffin tops.
They have ruined the marketing of this. It should be the muffin top pan. Oh, by the way, I can do eggs.
Yeah, probably.
It's the Seinfeld pan. Seinfeld?
That's like of a generation that is, we're on the wane.
Now you're calling me old fart again. I know.
I know what you're talking about, too.
Okay.
But
All right.
I said we're on the wane. My daughter used it to make, this was so genius, mini cakes. So she made, put cake stuff in there. And so she made three cakes and she stacked them up as a layer. So she made chocolate cakes. And she stacked
that's cute.
Thin chocolate cake and then iced it. Another one. And then she iced around the whole thing and poof. And yeah,
that's really
adorbs.
Cute. Yeah. Yeah. All right. What's for dinner tonight, Stacey?
Oh, Oh, I made meatballs. We thawed out some frozen. I made meatballs. I make a whole bunch at once, and then we freeze them. So we're having paninis.
Are these paninis. Swedish meatballs or Italian meatballs?
They're Italian meatballs. It's paninis. So we'll stick some.
Oh,
provolone,
I see. Oh, okay.
Do some bread.
Oh, that's good. We can go back to the sandwich guy we did last week. All right. So here's my number. Google and Meta are losing their dominant position in the digital ad market. The two companies will account for 50.5% of digital ad spending this year, which is huge. But that will slip to 48.7% by 2023 and 47.7% by 2024 because it has all kinds of new competitors. TikTok, Amazon, Walmart, Apple, they're all taking ad share. So it's not an oligopoly, a duopoly anymore. Well, it is right now. But the track is down. Now, mind you, the ad business is going up. It's a 13.2% increase, $359.9 billion. And I would think the ad market would be going down because people can have direct relationships through all these other platforms, and there's so much competition. Nonetheless, it's going up, but the market share for the big guys is going down. And I'm thinking of doing this for dinner tonight. So there was a little local story. Guy Fieri, right? Diners, was mm-hmm. it?
The guy that most people Diners. Love to hate, and I don't know why. He does a lot of good stuff.
He's great. I've come to love him. I go to sleep by him every night now. Put him on because they rerun him on TV like crazy. He goes and he cares about foods that other people wouldn't care about. He's not a snob. He loves the chefs and he loves all.
He
kinds
does
of
a lot of philanthropy, a ton
yeah,
of it.
He's great. I like him. So there was a little news story that he came into town nearby and went to a restaurant. Well, that place is going to get jammed. So I think I'm going to go there tonight because you know why? They have black bean burgers, and they're not easy to find out here. I think tonight is a black bean burger night.
You're going to scratch
that's why
that
we're
itch.
Story on time. Yeah. Yes.
Nice.
A little cheddar, a little Trump ketchup on there.
That's
know?
Okay. I will
you
continue to eat my leftovers
black bean
Applewood
oh,
smoked
yeah.
meat.
Last night we had quinoa and sweet potato burgers, and they were delicious with avocado.
Mm. Mm. I was thinking about getting
and homemade aioli.
Oh, did you home make the buns too?
No, I didn't do any of this. My husband made.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Might as well everything else.
one of my Twitter friends shows off making what looked like the best hamburger buns you've ever imagined. But we can't have,
I don't think my husband is like if a recipe says you have to do something one way, that is the way he will do it. Whereas I'm like, oh, aioli, that's just mayo. I don't need to make that on my own. But he does it all.
Got it. All right. Well, you've made it through. If you've made it this far, congratulations. Thank you. You get absolutely nothing for it, but you get to have a badge on saying, I made it through a twig without Leo. And I'm grateful that you were all here. I'm grateful to the wonderful co-host. Who all, Jammer B, who all is behind the scenes?
Mr. Benito, Mr.
Benito
Burke, Mr. Jammer
brand
B.
New. Brand mm-hmm. new. Benito's on the staff getting trained today. We didn't drive him crazy. And I want to thank you all. Oh, that's true. We might have. So we got a plug. So Stacy, is Stacy on IoT? Anything to plug? Any events? Are you going to Paris? Why are you going to Paris?
I'm speaking at the LoRaWAN World Expo next week.
Whoa.
Yay.
Outstanding.
Sign up for my newsletter. It's free. It's fun.
What's your topic of the speech?
Oh, good infrastructure is open infrastructure.
I feel it's like an etiquette talk from Aunt Stacy.
No.
Wait a minute. You say open as in open source. Is that what you mean? I'm not sure.
Oh, see, half the speech is defining the terms.
Uh-huh.
Because open source does not, it doesn't have to be open source to still become good infrastructure. It helps, though.
Okay. Do you need someone to carry your bags in Paris?
Yes, I do. You want to come, Aunt?
Yes, please.
my family's going to show up later. But
oh,
they
really?
Won't be there to carry my
oh,
bags.
My.
Yeah, they're going to join me.
Are you an oyster eater?
I love oysters.
Yeah,
same.
Best. They they taste the best there.
I'm spoiled because I live right next to the most delicious oysters in the world.
That's right. Yes, you do. Yes. but no, Paris does a pretty good job. You got to.
I've never had Parisian oysters.
Well, we'll have to see your ruling next in a month when you return. When are you returning? How long are you gone?
2 weeks. I'll be gone for 2 weeks.
Again, she goes. Again.
Provided no one I love gets COVID and I have to stay with them in a hotel.
Yeah, that's true. You get points there. I can't yell about that. Ant, what do you want to plug? Hop on photography. Hop on Ant.
Check
hop
out Hands On Photography. Hands On
Twit.tv slash H-O-P.
H-O-P. Yes, check it out.
AntPruitt.com prints.
That's
forget
right.
Get this virtual stuff by the real ant. The ant you can touch and hang and look at admiringly. And your friends will say, where'd you get that? And don't forget to join Club Prince. Twit, where Ant is the club director. He'll take you around the cruise ship and do shuffleboard with you and everything. It's a lot of fun.
Our book club book is Clara and the Sun.
Oh,
that's right. We do have the book announced. We need to figure out the date. I'll email Miss Stacy eventually to figure that out.
This way, every week we can talk about it. We'll just be like, here's some new dribs of information. It won't be anytime soon.
Keep teasing it. Keep teasing it. Join
it'll be
club
like the January
Twit,
6th hearings. Yeah, just keep on stretching it out there. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think that's it. We're done, and I'm grateful, and goodbye, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.